From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
It's still Holy Bull desperately trying to hold, concerned of final threat, but it is Holy Bull as game as a racehorse can be coming down to the wire. Holy Bull wins! What a hero!
Street Sense is full up. They're still head-to-head for the lead. Street Sense in a desperate struggle here with Grasshopper. Street Sense and Grasshopper under the line, and Street Sense prevails.
Welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
It is Arrowgate and Mike Smith. Oh, they've opened up a six-length lead here with one furlong to run. They've left the field railing behind. American Freedom and Gunrunner are fired behind Arrowgate. What a commanding performance. He won the Travers by 12.
Tis the Law has a four-length lead. He's left the others behind. It's Tis the Law. He won the Belmont Stakes. He's going to win the run, Happy Travers. And now it's on to Kentucky as the favorite in the Derby. Here he is, Saratoga's hometown hero, Tis the Law.
Now here's Mike Penna.
Well, still getting used to the Travers Stakes last year being run before the Kentucky Derby, but that was John Embriel and Tom Durkin and Larry Colmus bringing you into the Equine Forum this morning, the show that launched a network. Good morning, welcome, happy Travers Day. This is the Equine Forum, and it's all presented by Woodbine Entertainment on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you right up until 11 a.m. Eastern Time this morning. And over the course of the next 3 hours, I will get you ready for Travers Day at Saratoga, Pat O'Brien Day at Del Mar, the Florida Sire Series races at Gulfstream, and the Virginia Derby, which comes up on Tuesday afternoon at Colonial Downs. I'm also going to look back on a couple major Breeders' Cup Challenge races, which were run recently in France over the past couple of weekends. And I'll do that as I take you down the road to the Breeders' Cup in the final segment of this morning's show. And speaking of Breeders' Cup, I was actually looking at this as I was getting ready for the program, and it struck me. I am extremely proud to say that this year's event on November 5th and 6th at Del Mar will mark the 15th consecutive year HRN has had the privilege of being the exclusive radio home of racing's championship days. And I know I speak for our entire team when I say that that is a tremendous honor. And it's something that we don't take lightly. And we are excited to get back to Del Mar in, 69 days, 9 hours, and 46 minutes from right now. We'll all be there and expected to have full fans in attendance, all things being equal. And it should be a fantastic event returning to where the turf meets the surf. There are 7 graded stakes races on today's card at Saratoga. 6 of those are grade 1s. 3 of those grade 1s will see the winner earn an automatic berth into the Breeders' Cup. You have the Ballerina, a win and you're in for the Filly and Mare Sprint Division, the Personal Ensign for the Distaff Division, and the Sword Dancer for the Breeders' Cup Turf. We're going to see 5, let this sink in for a minute, 5 Eclipse Award winners on that card this afternoon. On a single card, you're going to have Gamin in the Ballerina, Whitmore in the Forego, Swiss Skydiver in the Personal Ensign, Channel Maker in the Sword Dancer, and Essential Quality, the odds-on favorite in the Travers. All 5 Eclipse Award winners competing on a single card. Pretty spectacular. Longtime turf writer Tim Wilkin, one of the best in the business, is going to join me live from Saratoga to kick things off in about 10 minutes from right now at 8:15 Eastern. Tim and I also have another huge, massive announcement, which is completely unrelated to Travers Day, but it is related to Horse Racing Radio Network. That announcement is going to be made during Tim's interview at 8:15. So you'll want to be sure that you're locked into that conversation in just a few minutes. Trainer Ron Moquette is going to be with me at 8:35 Eastern to talk about his remarkable 8-year-old gelding, Whitmore. Really, you can't get enough Whitmore talk, right? it's always fun to talk about this horse, and he looks to make amends for his third-place finish last time out in Saratoga, but he always shows up. He always runs his race. So I'll talk to Ronnie Moquette at 8:35 about the 8-year-old gelding. But Saratoga is not the only track offering win-and-year-in opportunities on this Saturday afternoon. Del Mar plays host to the Grade 2 Pat O'Brien, which is going to see the winner punch their ticket to the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile. 10 horses have been entered into that race, including the defending champion CZ Rocket from the barn of trainer Peter Miller, who is going to get a rematch with the horse he defeated 1 year ago, Flagstaff, for trainer John Sadler. Now, CZ Rocket certainly has the recency advantage over Flagstaff. He comes out of a third-place effort in the Bing Crosby at Del Mar on July 31st. Flagstaff, we haven't seen him since the True North at Belmont on June 4th. And here's a sidebar on Flagstaff, which I find extremely interesting. This will be his sixth start this year, but it's his first at a track in his home base of California. Yeah, his previous five starts here in 2021 have come at Oaklawn, Keeneland, Churchill, and Belmont. But he now goes back to California and Del Mar for the Pat O'Brien. His trainer, John Sadler, fresh off that big upset win in last Saturday's Pacific Classic and now going for a third Pat O'Brien win, is going to be here with me at 9:40 Eastern. So I'll get a chance to talk to him about Flagstaff, and we'll also get a chance to look ahead to his Santa Anita Derby winner, Rock Your World, who returns in tomorrow's Shared Belief Stakes. That's a race which marks the return of Kentucky Derby winner Medina Spirit. And it's his first start since finishing third in the Preakness in mid-May. And I think that's been kind of under the radar. It's been kind of not headline news that the Derby winner was returning. And I think that's because of the situation surrounding Medina Spirit and Bob Baffert and the issues with this year's Kentucky Derby. Everybody's afraid to make a big deal about the Derby winner coming back because we don't know if the Derby winner is going to be disqualified. That's all still pending. But he's back. He's back. You can't argue. Right now, he's the Derby winner, and he's back in the Shared Belief Stakes, and Rock Your World is too. So looking forward to that conversation with John Sadler at 9:40. Some good racing at Gulfstream later today as well. You have two FTBOA Florida Sire Series stakes, which are being contested. You have the Susan's Girl and the Affirmed. And when it comes to those races, it's really, really difficult to look past trainer Ralph Nix. Ralph has saddled a total of 9 winners in the Florida Sire Stakes Series. But he's dominated, absolutely, in Bob Baffert-like fashion, right? He's dominated the Affirmed over the past several years. And maybe that's a horrible comparison. I don't know. But Baffert has dominated over the years in many big races, and Ralph Nix has dominated this one. Facts are facts. Ralph has saddled the winner of the Affirmed in each of the last 4 runnings. And he's going to have 2 chances later today to make it 5 in a row. He's going to join me at 9 o'clock to discuss all of his contenders. Last night, so many of you tuned into our coverage of the Charlestown Classic, and you heard Art Collector get the victory over a very game defending champion in Sleepy Eyes Todd. And congratulations to the winning connections, Hall of Fame trainer Bill Mott, owner Bruce Lunsford, and jockey Louis Saez. And congratulations to the team who put the show on at Charlestown last night. The total of $7,179,783, which was wagered on last night's classic card, established a new single card handle record for the track that shattered the previous mark of $5.7 million, which was set on the 2019 Classic card. So congratulations to everybody involved. It was a fantastic night. The fans were back. It was so good for us to be back on site, looking over the stretch, looking over the finish line, and looking down below and seeing fans lining the apron along the rail. There were bands playing. It was a celebration of everything good in the sport of thoroughbred racing last night. And congratulations to all the winners, not just Art Collector, but there were several stakes races, several big winners last night, and a lot of smiles floating around Charlestown. So after this morning's show, I'm going to make the 179-mile pilgrimage to Colonial Downs in New Kent, Virginia, to get ready for our broadcast of the Grade 3 Virginia Derby on Tuesday afternoon. It's a rare Tuesday afternoon show for us. You can mark your calendars right now. You're going to hear all the action beginning at 4:30 Eastern on Tuesday, presented by the Virginia Thoroughbred Association. Jill Byrne is the Vice President of Racing Operations at Colonial, and she's going to be here at 9:20 to tell you what you can look forward to on what promises to be a fantastic afternoon of racing. At 10 o'clock Eastern, Sean Clancy is going to bring you his weekly In the Room conversation, this week with veteran jockey David Flores. You won't want to miss that. At 10:30, Kurt Becker takes you on his weekly Stroll Through Racing History, presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. And at 10:40, I go down the road to the Breeders' Cup with French turf rider John Gilmore. Today's poll question, presented by OwnerView and the Thoroughbred Owner Conference. Well, let's keep it pretty simple. Who is your pick to win today's Traverse Stakes? And I'm going to leave it open-ended. I was going to give you choices. I said, nah, Essential Quality is going to be a massive favorite. He is the horse to beat. There's no debating that. But we're talking about the graveyard of favorites, the graveyard of champions. Essential Quality is both of those. He's a favorite. He's a champion. Who is your pick to win today's Travers? Let me know. You can do that at HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook, and I'll try to read those responses as I make my way through the program here this morning. All right, when I come back, I'll kick off the program with longtime turf writer Tim Wilkin. He is live from Saratoga. He'll talk about Travers Day and a huge, huge announcement coming up from Tim, and you won't want to miss it. This is the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on HRRN.
Watch and wager on world-class racing from Woodbine Racetrack with Thursday, Saturday, and Sunday post times of 1:10 p.m. Eastern and a Friday post time of 4:50 p.m. Eastern. And on September 18th and 19th, you are not going to want to miss another big 2 days of racing with four Grade 1 races, including three Breeders' Cup Challenge, Winning Your In races featuring the Woodbine Mile, Natalma, and Summer Stakes. For more information on racing and handicapping, visit woodbine.com. That's woodbine.com.
I'm here with Joe Brown Nicholson of Nicholson Insurance Agency. Joe, how do you value a horse for insurance?
Well, Mike, it's easy to value a horse when purchased out of a public auction. The insured value would simply be the auction price. But insuring homebreds can be a little more involved.
How so?
Well, factors such as a stud fee, confirmation, pedigree, sales and race records of siblings, even popularity of the stallion all come into play.
How closely do you work with owners in determining a horse's value?
Well, the owner has a pretty good idea of the horse's value, so generally it's just a matter of agreeing to the request and having the policy issued.
For all your equine and general insurance needs, including farm owners, liability, homeowners, auto, and more, contact Joe Brown Nicholson at NicholsonInsurance.com or call 859-224-7080. That's 859-224-7080. Nicholson Insurance Agency.
The spring summer meet is just heating up at Gulfstream Park, with racing now through September 26th, Friday through Sunday. Look forward to the FTBOA Florida Sire Stakes Series starting July 31st. And stay in on the action from the comfort of your mobile phone with First Bet, the official app of Gulfstream Park. For 10 Palms reservations, stake schedules, or tips and analysis, visit GulfstreamPark.com. We are now fully open for public viewing.
When it's time to paint the fences and barns, think Farm Paint. At Farm Paint, you get the industry's best coatings and paints factory direct at low, low prices. Farm Paint is your source for quality paints, roof coatings, dustless arena footings, and more. You can purchase online or drop into a Farm Paint store near you with locations in Heart of Bluegrass Country at 700 Phillips Lane in Lexington, Kentucky, Columbus, Ohio, and Sandusky, Ohio. Buy factory direct and save at farmpaint.com. That's farmpaint.com.
Hey, it's Corey Lannery. You're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
And Alpha comes up on the far outside, charging after that lead. And down on the inside, it's Golden Ticket. Golden Ticket, and with a huge upset chance here with one furlong to go. Alpha's a full out second on the outside. Fast Falcon coming on. Can Alpha catch Golden Ticket? Golden Ticket, Alpha. Fast Falcon on the outside and Attican. And here's the wire. It is. Oh, it's too close to call. Did Alpha get that nose on the wire? Just ahead of Golden Ticket. Oh, it was desperately close. Fast Falcon coming on late there with Attican. It may have been Alpha, but if it was, it wasn't by much.
Tom Durkin with the call of the 2012 running of the Midsummer Derby, Alpha Golden Ticket. It wasn't by much. As a matter of fact, it was a dead heat. They hit the line together, Alpha Golden Ticket. And I wanted to play that call as I get into my next guest, who is Tim Wilkin. We'll introduce Tim formally here in just a second. But I wanted to get into that call, and Tim will remember this. Alpha was the favorite that year, and Alpha was trained by Kieran McLaughlin. Ken McPeak, that was his lone win in the Traverse Stakes, coming with Golden Ticket in dead heat fashion. Well, Ken McPeak is back in this year's Traverse with yet another long shot, just like Golden Ticket was. Kieran is no longer training. He is now the agent for Luis Saez. Luis Saez is riding the favorite, Essential Quality, in this year's Traverse. So you have some ties to that and some similarities to that 2012 running of the Traverse. And with that, I do welcome in Tim Wilkin. He is, well, retired from the Albany Times Union, but he is still working the Saratoga meet and probably working harder than ever. What a job he does. Tim is with me now. Tim, happy Traverse Day. Good morning.
Hey, Mike. Good morning to you. And all that things you were just saying made me dizzy.
I just couldn't resist that. I was looking at it, and I said, gee, you know, there are some eerie similarities to that 2012 Travers. Not that Ken McPeak is necessarily, well, you never know, right? It's horse racing. It's the graveyard of favorites, the graveyard of champions, and you never know.
And back then, he was 33-1, Golden Ticket was, something like that.
Yeah, he was a huge long shot.
Yeah, I mean, Alpha was the favorite, but yeah, so here we are, Traverse Day. Sitting here in the press box where I think I left here less than 10 hours ago. And cloudy, overcast, very cool, not hot. I heard it's hot in Kentucky.
Yeah, I have you beat. I'm actually broadcasting overlooking Hollywood Casino at Charlestown Races. We were here to broadcast the Charlestown Classic last night. The races were about 30 minutes delayed from their scheduled post time, so we didn't get off air until 11 o'clock. We're up early. We're on the Equine Forum. It's Traverse Day. Who needs sleep, right?
Exactly. Yeah, it was funny because I got home and I turned on the TVG and I said, "Why is the Charlestown Classic not going off yet?" And fortunate for me, I was able to watch it. But yeah, I was. It's horse racing. Crazy things happen in this game.
I won't hold it against you that you didn't listen to it on radio. You turned down the TV and not the radio, but hey, it's okay, Tim Wilkin.
But, you know, I got in the door. I turned it on right to see what. If I had more time, I would have turned on the radio to hear your dulcet tones.
I'm sure, but you get to hear them now. Let's talk about this Traverse Day card, and in particular, I guess we'll start with the Traverse and then see how much time we have left for everything else, because it's a massive card, and there are several storylines worth talking about. Essential Quality, he's going to be a heavy favorite. He's the champ. There's no doubt he's the one to beat, but as I mentioned, this is horse racing, and especially at Saratoga, crazy things happen. Give me your overview on this year's Traverse.
Yeah, I mean, Essential Quality is four to five for a reason. I mean, he has done more than the rest of this field. He's beaten every one of the horses in the field except for Miles D. I mean, Miles D's only had three starts. He just looks like he's head and shoulders above the rest of these with what he's done. I mean, he's not going to, you know, he's not going to win the beauty contest with the way he wins, but he just wins. I mean, in the Jim Dandy's most recent start, I mean, he had every right to lose that race. That was the time I picked against him because I thought if he was vulnerable, it was going to be that day. And, you know, he was wide on the turn. He was wide coming in the stretch. I mean, Keep Me in Mind came up the rail, and it looked like he was going to win, but but essential quality just finds a way to win because he's a superior racehorse to these, I think. And if he shows up and he runs his race, I don't think anybody beats him. That being said, I probably said the same thing in 2015 when American Pharoah came here. He got beat. I mean, I wasn't here when Secretariat lost to Whitney, but, you know, he got beat. And again, I'm not comparing essential quality to American Pharoah or Secretariat by any means, but, you know, he is a big favorite for a reason. If everyone runs their race, he should win.
If essential quality for some reason doesn't run his race, or maybe he gets stuck in traffic, or, you know, something happens, somebody else wins this race, Tim, who else would you look for to be standing in the winner's circle?
Well, the horse that I picked to win the race for second, in the way I'm calling it, I like Todd Pletcher, Mike Rapoli's horse, Dynamic One. I mean, he's a different horse. He showed he's a different horse when he won the Curlin. I mean, earlier this year, when he was in the Wooden Moor, it looked like he had that race won, but he sort of loafed on the lead when he got it and got caught by his stablemate, the 72-1 shot Bourbonic. And then after the Kentucky Derby debacle, he, Todd decided to stop on him, give him some rest, and he got him back, and all of a sudden he's a different horse. I mean, Mike Rapoli said that Todd has told him that in the morning, Dynamic One is in the top 1% of horses that he's ever trained.
Wow.
And, you know, that's saying something. But he just hasn't, earlier, was not able to, you know, translate the mornings to the afternoon. But in the, you know, in the Curlin, he went from last to first. He was very professional doing it. Once he got the lead, he kept going. And, you know, he's a horse that could be a player in the second half of the season moving forward. I mean, if he were to win the Travers, you know, he's a major player moving forward as we head towards the Breeders' Cup, I would think. I mean, he's the horse that I think has a lot of upside heading into this race. He's co-third choice would keep me in mind at 6-1. And keep me in mind, you know, he's going to get some buzz because he only got beat a half length, the essential quality in the Jim Dandy. But, you know, he's also, this will be, I believe, the sixth time he's run against essential quality. He hasn't been able to beat him yet. What makes you think he's going to beat him today? I mean, I think, keep me in mind, is this is the second time Joel Rosario is riding him. He's told the trainer, Robertino Diodoro, that he learned some things about him after the Jim Dandy. And Robertino didn't got go into detail of what he told him that he learned about him, but he said that now he thinks that he knows him better. And if he had done some of these things different that he told him about in the Jim Dandy, he thinks he might have won. So, you know, that's another horse that is probably going to take some money. But, again, he's only got one. He only had one win in his career. I mean, he's danced a lot of the dances, and I mean, he's third in the Ohio Derby, fourth in the Preakness. I mean, he has improved in each race since the Derby, but I think he'd have to improve a lot more to contend with essential quality, who, you know, I think he's totally cranked up for this race. I don't know if he was for the Jim Dandy, and I know Brad Cox has said this horse could not be doing any better. I mean, he doesn't know what else he could have done to make him any better, because he's just really, really good right now, maybe better than he was going into the Belmont. So, you know, I think that that's bad news for the rest of the field.
Yeah, that's scary. I started by drawing that parallel to the 2012 Travers Stakes, and King Fury is the horse that Ken McPeak will saddle this year. We mentioned Golden Ticket. I think you said he was 33-1. I think that's right. He was a big long shot. King Fury, he's probably going to be even longer than 33-1. I would expect, maybe I'm wrong on that, but he looks like a long shot. He's a horse that can close, though, and on his day he can really finish. Any shot that King Fury could make some noise,
you know,
in the stretch,
I think that some people, they've sort of discarded him after the his prep race for the Travers, which obviously was not the way they designed it when they came up to Saratoga from Kentucky, because, you know, McKenny wanted to run King Fury in the Jim Dandy. That was his plan. But that went into the toilet when you know, they had the whole barn was put under quarantine at the start of the meet for the herpes virus that swept through his barn. It wasn't one of Kenny's horses. It was Jorge Abreu's horse that got it. But, you know, it screwed up all their training in a way. And, you know, they had their own training sessions on the Oklahoma train track at 11 o'clock. And instead of, you know, he couldn't run in any races until August 1st. So he ran in the Saratoga Derby, the grade one, on the grass. That was the first time he was on the grass. And, you know, he was wide in the first turn on that race. He never was a factor, finished 10th of 11. So I think people might have forgotten about him as we head into this race. But, you know, he was a good second to Mask the Parade in the Ohio Derby. He won the Lexington. He was my pick in the Kentucky Derby, you know, but then he got sick the day before and he had to scratch. And I think there is some upside to King Fury, and who is named after the boxer Tyson Fury, if anyone did not know that. And I don't think Tyson Fury's going to be here. He was going to go to the Derby had he run. But, I mean, maybe he's a horse that passes everyone else in the stretch except for the winner. And, you know, that's he will be a price.
Talking with quote-unquote retired turf rider Tim Wilkin of the Albany Times Union. He did retire. He is covering Saratoga for the Albany Times Union, right, Tim?
Yeah, I did the triple. Yeah. I mean, when I took a buyout in December, but they said they'd give me the buyout if I would continue to still cover horse racing, and that's really all I want to do anyway. You know, so I did the Triple Crown. I'm not sure if I'm going to do the Breeders' Cup for them, but you know, it's I wasn't ready to give up the ghost on the horse racing quite yet. So here I am. Just the only thing that's missing is you guys.
Yeah, it's disappointing we are not on site this year. But again, we're here at Charlestown. We were here last night. We head to Virginia for the Virginia Derby coming up in a few days on Tuesday. But plenty of Travers conversation here on the Equine Forum this morning. And I am talking with Tim Wilkin here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Tim is in Saratoga. He's been there throughout the meet. And, Tim, when you look at the rest of this card, 5 Eclipse Award winners on a single card. We talked about Essential Quality in the Travers. You have Gamin in the Ballerina, Whitmore in the Forego, Swiss Skydiver in the Personal Ensign, and Channel Maker in the Sword Dancer. It doesn't get much better than this, does it?
And we haven't even mentioned that Life is Good is coming back, and you know, he was considered the horse for the spring classics before he got hurt. It is, you know, this might be the best Travers card I've ever seen. With you know, granted, some of those fields aren't big, but as far as star power goes, you cannot beat what we're going to be able to see this afternoon. It's just one after another, and from a media standpoint, it's kind of too bad that a lot of these races are going to get, you know, kick to the curb a little bit as far as coverage goes, because there's so many of them, and obviously the Travers is going to get most of the attention. But you know, you got to give hats off to Naira for putting this kind of a card together, because there are some serious racehorses that are going to be on this track this afternoon.
Yeah, there really are. Hey, what's the buzz around Life is Good? Have you heard much coming out of the Todd Pletcher? Now, that's a horse that, by the way, was in the care of Bob Baffert. He was moved to Todd Pletcher. This will be his first start for Todd. What are you hearing about Life is Good? Anything?
I'm hearing a lot. I mean, in the mornings, he has just looked fantastic. You know, it's like he's just, you know, the old adage, he's breathing different air. He looks like that in the mornings. He's just gobbled up the ground here, and granted, it's not the easiest spot to come back, you know, running 7/8 against the likes of a Jackie's Warrior, but I expect Life is Good to get back into the 3-year-old picture by winning this, and if that happens, who knows, maybe a trip to Pennsylvania Derby. And then maybe on to California, but he just looks like a very, very, very serious racehorse to me.
Well, it's a fantastic card, and you'll be able to catch all the action throughout the afternoon, wager on it. There are so many great things about Travers Stakes Day. Timmy knows that. He's been with me on this program for many, many years now, and I couldn't think of anybody better to kick off a Travers morning program than Tim Wilkin. Timmy, you're also going to be part of a new segment. This is big news. We haven't even mentioned this. I haven't mentioned it on the show. It hasn't been mentioned anywhere until this very moment. You and Dale Romans will be joining me for a new segment here on the Equine Forum in just a couple of weeks. We're looking to kick it off on Saturday, September 11th, after we get past Saratoga. That's the target date as of right now. You and Dale will join me. It will be a fun segment where I will pose questions to you and to Dale. You can debate them. You can each have an opinion. It'll be fun topics. It'll be more serious topics. We'll cover the gamut, and I'm really looking forward to it. It should be a lot of fun.
I'm looking forward to it as well. I mean, I go way back with Dale, and he's jumping out of his skin, getting ready to do this because he's really looking forward to it. And he's already told me some of his ideas and, you know, how he's going to educate the people and in the way that only Dale can. I think it'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I think I'm leaning toward, how about this? I think I'm going to call it, I ask, they answer. We'll keep it simple. That's what it'll be. I'll ask, you guys will answer, and it should be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'm sure that I might have to be the straight man for Dale.
Ooh, you're never the straight man. Can you play that role?
I know, I might have to. Dale, you know, Dale's going to be the comedic presence because he loves to talk and he loves to, and he's got that dry sense of humor, and I think people are really going to enjoy it.
Yeah, it'll be fantastic. Again, we're looking to launch that brand new segment with Tim Wilkin and Dale Romans. I ask, they answer, and that's going to come as part of this show on September 11th. So stay tuned. We'll have more information coming your way, but wanted to at least get it out there here this morning since Timmy was on the show. Tim, listen, I appreciate the visit. Wouldn't be Travers Morning without you, and go enjoy the day. Cash a few tickets.
Sounds good to me, Mike. You guys have a safe trip to the next stop. Virginia Derby, is it you said?
Yeah, Virginia Derby.
Well, and you guys will keep us well informed, as you always do.
All right, buddy, appreciate it. Tim Wilkin here on the Horse Racing Radio Network on this Travers Morning. Ron Moquette's coming up next. He'll talk about his gutsy 8-year-old gelding Whitmore. Can't get enough Whitmore talk. I'll do it next with Ronnie. But first, your Lexus Legends of the Turf, brought to you every Saturday at this time by Lexus of Lexington.
In late July of 1964, a well-matched field answered the call to post for the running of the Brooklyn Handicap over 10 furlongs. In that stellar field were Kelso with Milo Valenzuela in the saddle, Gunbo with Walter Blum at the controls, and Iron Peg with the shoe Willie Shoemaker up. There were 8 total starters, but the consensus was that the race would be decided amongst these 3, and consensus prevailed in what turned out to be a memorable performance by the eventual winner. A lot happened during the race, and a lot happened before. As the 8-horse field was loaded into the gate, Kelso knelt down in his stall as though preparing to pray. Rather than getting up on his feet, he reared back and sat on his haunches. It seemed totally out of context for the grand old champion, who had been calm in both the paddock and during the parade to post, but, for whatever reason, he was rank indeed at the gate. In fact, the starting gate went slightly askew as he went to his knees. Kelso had injured himself in the very same way while in training in California once before, and that had cost him the winter of racing. When Valenzuela and an assistant starter finally got Kelso righted, starter George Cassidy got the field away immediately and in good order. Kelso broke alertly enough, but by the time the field had gone barely an eighth of a mile, he had dropped well back into 7th place. By the stands they went and on into the clubhouse turn, with Gunbo under Walter Blum setting the pace and breezing along uncontested while increasing his lead. Around the turn and on into the backside, Gunbo opened up a margin so commanding it looked like a one-horse race with the rest of the field far in arrears. Iron Peg, the suburban winner under Shoemaker, had been the one that figured to prompt the pace, but he had all he could do to just keep close enough to have Gunbo in sight. You couldn't find the rest of the field with a sheriff's warrant. By the time they had gone 5 furlongs, Kelso was so far back that Valenzuela began whipping him to try to close some part of what was a monumental gap to Gunbo, and there was half the race yet to be run. Gunbo reeled off sensational fractions on the front end, and no doubt a great many in the crowd stole a look at the teletimer to check the fractions. At the top of the stretch, with still a quarter of a mile left to run, It was all over but the yelling, with the only remaining question to be answered was what the final margin of victory would be, and of course the final time. Blum was in the proverbial catbird seat for the entire trip, opening up a lead of 7, then 9, 10, and finally 12 lengths, the winning margin. He had never faced any kind of a challenge at all for the entire 10 furlongs. The final time was the expected sensational 1:59.3. Until this race, Gunbo became the first and only horse to have ever clocked less than 2 minutes for the distance in New York. Kelso appeared to have suffered no ill effect from the incident at the gate, returning after the race in good shape with no soreness. It was, very simply, that Gunbo had had his day, and a five-star effort indeed it was, July 1964, in the running of the Brooklyn Handicap.
Visionary design, visceral performance, and innovative technology. That's Lexus. When every detail, every moment, and every emotion is crafted by Lexus, it leads to amazing. This is Mike Pena, and I can tell you personally, as a Lexus owner, the enjoyment you'll experience driving any Lexus model is unparalleled. Visit Lexus of Lexington today and see what I've been talking about for over 15 years. Experience the enjoyment of Lexus and the enjoyment of shopping Lexus of Lexington. The people there truly make the difference. Long-tenured, friendly, knowledgeable team members, no pressure, no hassle. I promise, it's not your typical dealership experience. Lexus has also been a longtime supporter of the horse industry, and Lexus of Lexington continues to sponsor Keeneland's Raven Run Stakes each fall. So from one horse person to another, the next best thing to being around horses is driving a Lexus. Visit Lexus of Lexington and tell them Mike sent you.
The thoroughbred season at Colonial Downs is in full swing. The season continues through September 1st with racing every Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday at 1:45 p.m. Closing week features the Grade 3 New Kent County Virginia Derby along with four other turf stakes on Tuesday, August 31st. It's our biggest day of the meet. Bet an all-stakes, all-turf pick 5 wager on Derby Day. Closing day, Wednesday, September 1st, features 5 stakes for Virginia bred and sired horses. Virginia Derby Day, August 31st, followed by Virginia bred Stakes Day the following afternoon. Post time both days at 1:45 p.m.
This year, the fans choose the finalists. Coming this August, for the first time ever, the fans pick the finalists in four 2021 America's Best Racing Fan Choice Awards categories. Favorite racing TV personality, racetrack food, podcast or radio show, and favorite smaller circuit racetrack. Get ready to be heard and to vote on americasbestracing.net.
The spring summer meet is just heating up at Gulfstream Park, with racing now through September 26th, Friday through Sunday. Look forward to the FTBOA Florida Sire Stakes Series starting July 31st. And stay in on the action from the comfort of your mobile phone with First Bet, the official app of Gulfstream Park. For 10 Palms reservations, stake schedules, or tips and analysis, visit GulfstreamPark.com. We are now fully open for public viewing.
Okay, this is Carl Nasker, and I listen to HRRN.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
CC Rocket is in fourth. Diamond Oops and Lasting Legacy move as a team to the center of the track. Echo Town and Manny Waugh in some traffic looking toward the inside. Jasper Prince the leader. Here comes Empire of Gold on the outside of that one. Echo Town, an awkward move there. CC Rocket is moving up on the outside. Here's Whitmore striding forward for the lead in the final furlong of the Breeders' Cup Sprint. What a day in the career of this 7-year-old. Whitmore, Aaron Ortiz Jr. have won the Breeders' Cup Sprint in 1 minute 8.61 seconds.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on this Saturday morning. Big day of racing coast to coast. Mike Pena, Baron in the backstretch, with you as always. And that was Kurt Becker with the call of last year's Breeders' Cup Sprint at Keeneland. And that's the way it sounded. Here's Whitmore. I know that's music to the ears of trainer Ron Moquette, who is with me now here on the network. Ronnie, good morning.
Good morning.
Is that your ringtone?
No, but it should be. That's a good idea.
Yeah, it really should be. You know, I can't get enough of that call. I can't get enough of so many Whitmore moments, and we can never get enough Whitmore conversation here on the program. So I said, you know, look, he's running in the forego today. 8-year-old gelding, I got to get Ronnie back on the program. Just how cool is this horse, man?
He's a blessing. I mean, he's you know, there's nothing easy about him, but everything is we're just lucky to have him.
Has he gotten more obstinate in his older age?
No, I'd say the same obstinate. I mean, he's he doesn't change. You know, every day he's okay with this. He'll challenge you with that. He's happy to do this, and he'll let you know he don't like this. I mean, he's just 100% honest. If he doesn't like it, you know it.
Do you still go back and watch that Breeders' Cup Sprint from time to time?
You know what? I actually don't, because I'm too busy trying to figure out a way to do it again. But if it's ever on, I don't walk away from the TV, you know?
After he crossed the finish line, I know that you celebrated and it was fantastic, and you and I talked after the race. But as you started to look toward his 2021 campaign, obviously that was the ultimate goal, to get back to the Breeders' Cup Sprint, defend the title. What was your approach coming into this year with his schedule?
Well, it was just keeping the focus on the main prize. Is, you know, he's not got a stallion career ahead of him. I don't want to risk everything for every race. I want to, you know, keep the big races in mind. And as long as he's doing like he's doing and he's enjoying what he's doing, then we try our best to get back to the big stage. And from that point on, those races actually work out better for us than the smaller ones, because it seems like there's more speed in the big ones that makes it to where we can come pick them up down the lane.
He begins his 2021 campaign in March at Oaklawn. He's second by a neck in the Hot Springs. He comes back. He's second in the Grade 3 Count Fleet. He's third beaten a neck in the Grade 1 Churchill Downstakes, and third in the AG Vanderbilt on July 31st at Saratoga last time out. He is continuously knocking on the door. He hasn't found a way to get back to the winner's circle yet this year. What's it going to take today? What's the key?
I mean, we're going to have a good trip. You know, one of the things that's never written about is that he runs on big days, and on big days the track is tight, and you know, a lot of times we have to have a speed duel with some good horses to set it up to where we can bring our best effort, which is closing, and sometimes speed carries, and that's fine. I mean, we're going to be beat sometimes by horses that shouldn't beat us on talent level because of a pace scenario, but we're also going to win our share of races that maybe we shouldn't have won because of pace schedule or pace, you know. So we just let it shake out, and we put him in a position to run his race. And then we, you know, as long as he comes back happy and healthy, then we reshuffle the deck and get him ready for the next race.
What have the four weeks been like since that AG Vanderbilt race on July 31st?
It's been very good training for him up here. Saratoga has a very good, an obvious commitment to the safety, and the track is good, and horses seem to do well when they're up here. And we've left him here. He didn't travel anywhere, so he stayed here and got to train, so we didn't have to ship. So all that part is good. You know, I'd say he's had a bunch of really good days of training. And we think that we're leading over a very capable horse of winning the race, should things work out our direction.
I know you spend a lot of time following not just your horse, but a lot of the horses, especially in that sprint division when you have a horse like Whitmore. Size up the competition for me in today's forego. Some of the other horses that he's going to have to contend, obviously all of them, but a couple of the horses that when you take a look at this race, you say, okay, here's who we got to keep an eye on.
Okay, well, I mean, there's two horses in there that are wild cards. Mischievous Alex is on the rail, That's a very nice horse who's run very good races. He won the Grade One Carter. You don't do that on accident, you know?
Yep.
And then Yalpan, who's coming in here, he went off as the Breeders' Cup favorite as a three-year-old, and now he's coming in this race, coming off of a freakish effort at Pimlico. So I think he's a formidable horse that is just we don't know what they're going to do. If either one of those guys run their good races, then they're definitely going to be contentious. And then the old tried and trues, the Mind Control, the Frenzy Fires, those are very good horses as well. And, you know, in a race like this, there's so many decent, good horses, classy horses, that whoever gets things, you know, in their favor has a definite edge. I was looking through the card, you know, this field is top to bottom, some of the nicest horses in the division. And, you know, if you take this race and the race out at, I think it's the Pat O'Brien out at Del Mar.
Yep.
This is a preview. This is – everybody's here. They're all present and accounted for. You look at both of those races, and you're going to see your top choices for the Breeders' Cup Sprint. So if you want to see what scenarios work out better for who, and for a handicapper, if you're not glued to these races, then you're missing out on some information you'll need the first Saturday of November.
Yeah, your old Whitmore's rival, CZ Rocket, going to the post is likely the favorite in that Pat O'Brien later today at Del Mar. He's got that showdown with Flagstaff out there. So, as you said, this is, you know, Ronnie, this is a very, very deep division. It's a very difficult division to compete in. And now today you even have to compete with Lexingtonian, who is the horse that upset the apple cart against you in the AG Vanderbilt last time out. So, so many
this
top
is
contenders.
Lexingtonian distance, you know. This,
yeah.
That's the thing too. Is 7 furlongs with anybody that's handicapped in this. 7 furlongs is not 6 furlongs, and it's so far away from 6 furlongs that everybody thinks, well, it's just a little bit further. No, it actually sets up completely different. And sometimes you'll have horses that prefer that distance. We don't see it very often. So you get a horse, you know, like him that he's won 2 of his big races have been at 7 furlongs. And then you've got Mind Control, who, if there is a specialist, it's him. He's won 5 races at 7/8. You know, a lot of horses in here hasn't run the distance 5 times.
Yep.
He's got 5 wins and almost $1 million at today's distance. So you count in the specialist distance of 7 furlongs, you come up with a really unique gambling opportunity if you feel strongly about one of these.
It's a great point. And conversely, Whitmore has not excelled at the 7 furlong distance. He has 6 starts, a first, a second, a third, as you well know. Why has it been so difficult for him to get over the hump in these 7 furlong races?
Pace means everything, but I got to correct you on one thing.
Yeah.
We won this race that we're running in today and beat City of Light at 7/8. So that one win was in the forego, and it was against City of Light. He come back to win his next 2 outs, which was the Breeders' Cup Mile, and
yep.
then the big fancy race down in Miami. So what's that called, the Pegasus or something? So
yeah.
He has done well at this distance, but it all depends on what kind of pace goes. And those big, long striding horses that like to be on the front end have a little bit of an advantage if they get the right fractions over a horse like ours that likes to sit in a pocket and then burst down the stretch. You can't catch them if they were able to do the first 5/8 really easy.
You know, one thing's for sure, Whitmore doesn't need to take his track with him. He shows up, he runs wherever he goes, and he would do the same. We know he'll do the same at Del Mar if all things being equal and he makes it out there in November. Have you given any thought, Ronnie, or is it too early to think about what the next steps might be after today's forego?
No. I mean, you know, we people are probably sick of me saying it in the barn and you know, whoever asks, I always say, we wake up tomorrow, we go to the barn, and we ask Whitmore what he wants to do.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, from that point on, we make our decision from there. I have tentative plans. I have, would I like to run in the Phoenix? Yes. Would we like to go to the Breeders' Cup? That's, both of those races are on our radar. But if it means I can have a better shot of winning the sprint and avoiding the Phoenix, then we got to do whatever. And if it means we don't run in any of them and we find something else, then that's what we have to do. But we schedule working backwards from the Breeders' Cup, and the recipe of going to the Phoenix has always worked out well for us.
You know, I just pulled up the chart of his four-go win in 2018. You mentioned City of Light, who was second. CZ Rocket was fourth in that race. So CZ Rocket was still running at a high level, or was beginning to run at a high level back then. And here he is again. I mentioned running in the Pat O'Brien. He's a horse that continues to be hickory, just like Whitmore.
Yeah, the sprint division is a fun division. I know it's not the marquee. That's, everybody wants to talk three-year-olds in our country, and I don't blame them. I'm excited to see the Travers, and then we get hung up on the distance races. But the fact of the matter is, more sprint races are run every year than route races, and there's more competition. You get a good group that battle each other, and it's pretty fun. It's a pretty fun deal to have some of these guys stay around, and you know, you look at Frenzy Fire, Mind Control, CZ Rocket, and then back in the day, Kona Gold and Roy H, and all those guys were sticking around and running, and it gives the fans and the gambler a chance to become familiar and to gain rooting interest. And for me, it's like the 100-yard dash in the Olympics. I mean, you know, I don't care how excited you are to watch the mile or how excited you are to watch the marathon, hurdles or whatever. Everybody wants to see the 100-yard dash in the Olympics, and that's what the sprints are.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Ron Moquette with me here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Ronnie, I'll let you go. I know it's a busy day. Always appreciate the visit and a little bit of time. Go get it done with Whitmore today. We'll be cheering, and have fun, my friend.
Thank you very much. We'll try our best.
All right. Ronnie Moquette here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Great comment. You know, and his thoughts on pace, right? It's all about, especially for a horse like Whitmore, who comes from off the pace. You got to have pace in front of you to set it up. And a lot of these runner-up finishes, third-place finishes, and you heard him answer my question about the distance. He has had success winning the four-go in 2018, but that's his only win at the distance. He's been beaten five other times. And it's all about pace. You got to get the right setup. If Whitmore gets that, he's as good as anybody. But you could say that for a lot of these horses in here. Ronnie pointed that out. Especially in these sprint races and a specialist distance of 7 furlongs, 7/8 of a mile, you have to get the right setup. We'll see if Whitmore gets it later today in that four-go. What a card at Saratoga, and can't wait to see it. Going to get to another break. We'll come back with more. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Gainsway Stallion Tappet, America's most dominant sire with over 80 greatest stakes winners and more lifetime grade one winners than any sire in the nation. Recent stars include multiple stakes winner and grade one victress, Valiance.
Valiance with the lead. Ollie's Candy trying. Valiance prevails by 3/4 of a length in the Judd Mott Spinster.
And two-year-old sensation, Essential Quality, winner of the grade one Breeders' Cup Juvenile.
Final furlong of the Juvenile. Essential Quality coming forward for the lead. Late run from Keep Me In Mind. Hot Rod Charlie to the inside. Essential Quality and Luis Saez have won the TVG Breeders' Cup Juvenile.
In the sales ring, his yearlings topped both opening sessions of Keeneland September, including the $2 million sale topper. A breed shaper, a dream maker. Tappet, standing at Gainsway.
Hi, Tony.
Hey, Matthew.
There's a reason why Tony's Steaks and Seafood is my favorite restaurant. It's because I want to feel part of the family. Isn't that right, Tony?
That's right. There's a saying on the wall that I truly believe in. There's always room for one more at our table. We just want you to be part of our family.
And believe me, you will be. It's Tony's Steaks and Seafood right across from Triangle Park. Visit them at TonysSteaksAndSeafood.com.
Woodford Feed, where tradition merges with technology. Family-owned since 1940 and providing exceptional customer service, Woodford Feed specializes in the highest quality feed, using only the finest ingredients to ensure optimal nutrition for your horses. In addition, Woodford Feed can help with all your farm needs, including field seed, fertilizer, and weed control. So whether your horse is sprinting around the racetrack or has a foal by her side, count on Woodford Feed to provide the quality nutrition necessary to perform at the highest level. Woodford Feed, Versailles, Kentucky.
As the COVID-19 vaccines become available, you may be asking yourself, should I get it? Will it help me get back to doing the things I love, like meeting friends or traveling? And can I do it without putting my family at risk? You've got questions. That's normal. So visit GetVaccineAnswers.org for the latest information on the COVID-19 vaccines. Getting back to the moments we miss starts with getting informed. It's up to you. A message brought to you by the Ad Council and the CDC.
Thursday evenings, 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern, is the Briznet.com call-in show. It's your chance to call in and let the Horse Racing Radio Nation know what's on your mind. Call us at 888-966-HRRN and discuss the topics you choose in the world of thoroughbred racing. The Briznet.com call-in show, every Thursday, 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern, on Sirius 219 and XM 201, or streaming live online at horseracingradio.net.
This is Jockey Orlando Bocachica, and you are listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
But here's Sutosh on the outside. Final furlong, World of Trouble, and Gaffleon pleading for more. On the outside, and Sutosh going to make him earn it. Sutosh has the momentum out in the center. And Sutosh and Eric Consell get up to win it. Gorder and Ty to the attack is second. Cajun Firecracker has been defeated. 16th to go. Gorder and Ty taking on a very game well-defined. And Gorder and Ty gets the money. Liam's Lucky Charm puts ahead in front. Liam's Lucky Charm for a lead. Chance it battles back. These two in a show. Here's the line photo finish. Liam's Lucky Charm surged right at the wire. Final eighth of a mile, and Breeze on By is still finding. Big Daddy Dave can't get him, nor can anybody else. It's on to two turns with a try for a sweep of the series. It's Breeze on By to win the affirmed by four in the end.
How about that super effective? Four in a row for trainer Ralph Nix in the Florida Sire Stakes affirmed division, and he's going to go for five later today. He has two chances in that race. I'll talk to Ralph coming up in just a few minutes, but before I get to that, it is time to get you ready to bet the races, especially at Gulfstream, with today's first bet. Today's first bet comes in race 9 at Gulfstream. It is the Florida Sire Stakes, Susan's Girl. 4:36 p.m. Eastern is the post, and it's number 6, Sassenach, who is 5-2 on the morning line and has a 28% win projection from first bet. Rates 15 points higher than the next closest rival, ranks top 2 in 5 of the 8 most important first bet factors for the race. An 8-length winner of the Desert Vixen to kick off the Phillies Florida Sire Stakes series. Adding Blinkers produced big results for this filly in her second start after drifting in her debut defeat. And she is one of only 3 last out winners in the field of 11. Number 6, My Sassenach, in race 9 at Gulfstream Park, is today's first bet. I'm back with more in 60 seconds right after this word from First Bet.
Have you heard about the new handicapping and betting app that is sweeping the nation? It's called First Bet, and it puts the power of AI-assisted handicapping, seamless wagering, and live HD video in the palm of your hand. Thousands of bettors have already made First Bet their way to handicap, bet, and watch more than 300 of the world's top tracks. Isn't it time for you to join them? And when you give First Bet a try today, you can cash in on a huge welcome bonus. Sign up with promo code SPORTOFKINGS, all one word, and you will get $10 just for joining, as well as a 10% rebate, up to $500 for your first first 30 days. With that much free cash on the line, what do you have to lose? Get started at first.com/bet. That's ST.com/bet. And don't forget promo code Sport of Kings when you sign up. And if you already have an ExpressBet account, you're way ahead of the game. Simply log into FirstBet using your username and password, and you're off to the races. Up to 18 years or older and 21 years older in certain states to open an account with FirstBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal, void, or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Well, fast-moving hour number one is in the books. Hour two begins with Ralph Nix momentarily, but I have time here for a couple of announcements for some of our friends at local businesses in Central Kentucky, including Whitetail Habit Outfitters and their new Elite Outdoor Superstore, which opened last November. Actually, it's almost a year old. Fantastic. Congratulations to Tevis McCauley, who is a former horse trainer. He also does a lot of hunting and fishing, and he opened the Elite Outdoor Superstore to be the home of everything you would need to hunt deer and turkey and ducks and so much more. Next Saturday is opening day of archery season. It begins a several month-long deer season here in Kentucky, and I know that he's going to be very busy. If you are getting ready to get out in the woods, make sure you stop by and see them at the Elite Outdoor Superstore in Nicholasville, Kentucky. It is just 3 miles south of the Fayette Mall on Nicholasville Road. If you're coming in for Keeneland, if you're coming in for the Keeneland sales, the race meet, all you have to do is swing in and see them, and you can get everything you need to get you ready for the season. By the way, another one of our local sponsors, Woodford Feed in Versailles. I stopped in the other day. I was picking up some corn to feed my deer down on the farm, and I noticed that they have the Corn Topper product, which they've carried the past couple of years. It's fantastic. It has molasses and all kinds of great stuff that the deer love. You put it right on top of the corn. And they have that in stock now at Woodford Feed. So you go in and see Bob Cleveland and the team in there, and they'll help you out with everything you need. And not just for hunting and your farm, but they can take care of you with all the lime needs that you have and fertilizer and seed and all that kind of stuff over at Woodford Feed. They do a fantastic job. All right, hour two kicks off with Ralph Nix. I'll tell you what else is ahead on the program. A lot of great stuff still to come. I'm back with hour two right after I pause 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
This is the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Welcome back. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you on a very busy Saturday morning. If you missed my conversation with Tim Wilkin or with Ron Moquette in the first half of the program, first hour of the program, all you have to do is head back to our website after I finish up at 11 a.m. Eastern. That's horseracingradio.net. You can check out the podcast of this show and all of our shows. They're there for you to listen to at your leisure, horseracingradio.net. Ralph Nix is going to join me here in just a moment. I'm going to talk to Ralph about today's Affirmed Stakes. And there are two Florida Sire Series races coming up at Gulfstream later today. I'll talk to Ralph. He has dominated the Affirmed, winning it 4 years in a row. He'll be with me in just a minute. Jill Byrne is the Vice President of Racing Operations at Colonial Downs. She is going to be with me coming up right around 9:20 Eastern time to tell you what you can look forward to on the Virginia Derby Day program. That's on Tuesday. We'll be there with 2 hours of coverage. You'll hear all the action, 4:30 to 6:30 Eastern, here on Sirius 219, XM 201, and, of course, streaming worldwide on our website. John Sadler going to be with me toward the end of this hour at 9:40 to talk about Flagstaff making his return, Rock Your World coming back in the Shared Belief against Medina Spirit tomorrow. I'll talk to John at 9:40. 10 o'clock, it's In the Room with Sean Clancy. He goes one-on-one with jockey David Flores. Kurt Becker takes you on a stroll through racing history at 10:30. And at 10:40, I go down the road to the Breeders' Cup, talking about a couple of the races which have currently been run in France. And I do that with John Gilmore, who is a turf rider based in France. He's been on top of it, and I'll talk to him at 10:40 to tell you about those contenders as they make their way toward the Breeders' Cup World Championships. Poll question this morning. At HRRN, let me try that again. At HRRN, I can say the letters of our network, on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. It is, who is your pick to win today's Travers? Pretty simple. And a couple of responses coming in. I'll read those as we make our way throughout the show, but keep them coming, and I'll get to those later in the program. Well, Ralph Nix is with me. Earlier at the end of hour one, you heard that montage of his four wins in the Affirm Stakes. They've come in each of the last four runnings. He looks to make it five in a row later today, and he's with me now. Ralph, good morning.
Good morning, Mike.
What's the key, man? How do you do it year in and year out?
Mike, I'm good. Our connection's a little in and out.
All right, let's see if we can make that better for you. How's that? Can you hear me?
Yes, you're good now.
All right, cool. How do you do it every year? You've been so consistent. I mentioned the four wins in the Affirm Stakes, four consecutive years, a couple of chances to add to that today. How do you do it? What's the secret?
Having the right horse on the right day and being lucky.
There's more to it than that. You got to get him ready and get him to peak, right?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, we were a little behind this year compared to in the past, but both of the colts are training well, and you know they deserve the opportunity. You only get one opportunity in their life to run for that much money for the sired state bred. So, you know, it can be a big payday for a good, useful kind of horse without having to run against the top end company in the country, even though there's been some nice horses go through the program.
You have two Florida Sire Series races on tap today. You have the Susan's Girl and the Affirmed. We're going to talk about your horses in each of those, but tell me about the impact that those types of races have on horsemen at these local tracks, because they're really a big deal.
Mike, I lost you again.
All right, let's try it one more time. Ralph Nix is with me on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Ralph, I was asking about the impact that these types of races have on horsemen at the local tracks. They're a really big deal, aren't they?
Well, they are. I mean, it's something that I noticed whenever I first came down here after a couple of years. It was like, you know, we need to be competitive in these races. There's a lot of money given away, you know, to three races for the colts and the fillies every year. So, and you know, 6 years participating, we've been fortunate enough to win nine of them so far, and hopefully we can add some more as time goes on.
Means a lot to breeders too, doesn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, it gives the local breeders a chance to have big paydays and get some stake wins underneath some horses that maybe not ready for the next level yet. And it's like I said, I think it's a very, very good program, and I think it's an important program to maintain going forward.
You know, Ralph, you were very humble when I asked you about getting a horse ready for these big races, but what's your approach to getting a horse ready to peak for a stakes race like this?
Well, I'm a big let them get ready, don't make them get ready. When I get the horses earlier in the year, it seems to work out better for me. And then, you know, I think it goes back to my upbringing between my father and the years with Bill Mott on targeting races. I mean, if, you know, we know there's a three race series coming up in X, you know, these are starting to do good, you know, let's try to get a race in them beforehand or whatever. But, like I said, I'm a big, let them get ready, not make them get ready guy.
You know, we were speaking of Bill Mott, we were on site at Charlestown last night for the Charlestown Classic, and Bill's won more than 5,000 races in his career. He never won the Charlestown Classic. Now, granted, it was only the 13th running, but he finally added that one to his resume, too. How good is a guy like Bill Mott?
I think he's outstanding. I mean, I was there for 13 years, and, you know, he sees the horse different than a lot of people, and he's part horse, and, you know, he's just his attention to the detail of the animal is exceptional. I mean, I, you know, had to learn some things just by being around by accident.
Yeah, it just absorbs. Talking with trainer Ralph Nix here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Ralph, let's talk about the horses you'll saddle in those stakes races at Gulfstream today. We'll start with the Affirm Stakes, since that's the one we were talking about. You've dominated it 4 years in a row. You have Catton and Awesome Crusader. They'll break side by side. Tell me about those two horses.
Well, they're two somewhat different types. I mean, Awesome Crusader, so far he's a grinder. I mean, they're going to outfoot him early, and you got to stay busy on him, and, you know, he'll keep coming, you know, if there's no issues. I mean, the last race showed that, you know, he was being ridden down the backside just to maintain some sort of position in, middle of the pack, and he kept grinding away to be second, to the horse that I think probably should be the favorite in there, because, that horse got left and, rushed up and still ran a huge race that day. But he's just a grinder, solid horse, and he should keep improving. I mean, the last time I led one to the affirms like that, it was Garter and Ty, and he was also a maiden, and he ran, he won that day.
How about Catton?
Catton, on the other hand, complete different type. I mean, he's very tactical, very smart little horse, and kind of got ready at an odd time. I didn't expect him to be ready to run when he ran his first start, but he had showed me enough it was time to go over there, and I knew it was good timing, for this leg. So he I would expect him to be tactical in the race depending on the speed set up, and he's very professional. I mean, he came inside, took dirt and everything, his first start, so, there's not any reasons to think that he won't overcome any adversity if it's thrown at him.
I wonder what the other trainers think when they enter into a race like this, a race that you've won 4 years in a row, and they see that you've entered two horses this year. Do they think, oh, gosh, Ralph Nix is back in here?
Probably figure I'm throwing darts to try to see if we can get lucky.
Well, you have two long shots. They're both bigger prices this year. Catton 15-1 on the morning line. Awesome Crusader 30-1. Did you expect them to be that long?
Well, they're just one broke his maiden for 50. One of them's a maiden. I mean, you would expect them to be a price. I think at the end of the day, they're probably more of a 8 and 10-1 shot instead of a 15 and a 30.
All right. Well, you have one in the Susan's Girl as well. That is the 2-year-old filly, Rachel's Rock. She's making her debut in this stakes race. Ambitious spot.
That's an ambitious spot. Unfortunately, she didn't get here earlier and get a little more education in her. She got loose in the post parade of the first one, just feeling good, but she's got some quirks about her. She has a lot of talent, and with Jack Trebetter being the owner and, fighting with Stonehenge over leading owner all time in the Stallion Series, Fred wants to have some in there. It would have been nice to have had a proper race in her before any of this stuff started, but it didn't happen, and here we go. We're going to take a shot and see what happens. I mean, hopefully she'll hold it together, get to the gate fine, get away good, and, from there I think she'll make a good showing. Will she be good enough with the seasoned horses? I don't know that, but I feel that talent-wise, watching her train, she'd got to the gate in the first leg. I don't think she'd have been any worse than second.
Probably would have helped if she had a little bit of pedigree too, huh?
Just a touch.
Yeah, she is a daughter of the now sire, Jess's Dream. And if people don't know that name, Jess's Dream is a son of Curlin, and the dam is Rachel Alexandra. So how about that?
Yeah, she should relish the distance and hopefully run good enough to be participating in the last leg for sure.
All right, well, Ralph Nix is here. It's a busy morning. I'll let him go. Ralph, really appreciate the visit, and all the best later today. Let's go make it 5 in a row.
All right, Mike, thank you. And we've got Dad's boss's horse here too, so I've got to lead the two of them over there. So hopefully we can get something done there. It'd be nice to beat him a nose or something just for the fun at the end of the day.
Yeah, there you go. And will you text him if we have a little fun with him afterwards, if you do?
Yeah, I think we'll both have a smile on our face either way it comes out.
Great stuff, Ralph. Appreciate it. Good luck.
All right, very good. Have a good day. Thank you, guys.
Right,
good luck to everybody on your bets today, and hope there's a lot of safe racing and horses come back good, and we'll move on to the next day.
Well said. Thanks, Ralph. All right, Ralph Nix here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Yeah. Rachel's Rock, 20-1 on the morning line. And you look at that pedigree. I mean, you see names like Curlin and Rachel Alexandra in your family tree. You're doing something right. Jess's Dream, only raced one time. It was a winning effort at Saratoga back in 2015. As a stallion, he's had a couple runners. Chess's Dream, currently his leading earner, that's a Florida bred, 2 for 10 lifetime, and you say, okay, well, 2 for 10, that it is what it is. But one of those wins was in the Grade 3 Kitten's Joy earlier this year. So Jess's Dream, who comes in with a fantastic pedigree as a sire, has a chance to throw a good runner, and maybe, at least that's what Ralph Nix is helping, maybe Rachel's Rock, which is an appropriate name for this filly, turns out to be pretty special indeed. She's working well. She's training well. But again, 20 to 1, do you take, I think you have to take a shot, right, just based on that pedigree? Throw her in there somewhere. If she turns out to run to that pedigree, maybe she adds to your exacta, your trifecta, your superfecta, who knows? But I think 20 to 1 on an unknown commodity like this with a pedigree that she has is certainly worth it. So good luck to Ralph, and appreciate his visit here. By the way, one more announcement I need to get to. The ABR Fan Choice Awards are now open, and here is what you can vote on right now. It ends August 31st, this week, so you have 3 more days to go and vote. It is your favorite radio show or podcast. Your favorite radio show or podcast. You can go to americasbestracing.net to cast your vote, and I would encourage you to do so, and we'll let the chips fall where they may. Your favorite radio show or podcast, ABR. They do a great job with all the Fan Choice Awards. Again, americasbestracing.net is where you can vote. All right, going to come back with the Industry Star of the Week, presented by Stuart Morris, and a visit with John Sadler, still to come here in hour number 2. This is the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on HRRN.
After an unprecedented year apart, the time has finally come to say, welcome back, fans, to the Breeders' Cup World Championships. Welcome back to the prestige and excitement to witnessing history firsthand. As the world's most majestic athletes look to be crowned champion in 14 thrilling Breeders' Cup races, and over $31 million in purses and awards waits across the finish line. On November 5th and 6th at Del Mar, the Breeders' Cup will welcome it all back. The world's best thoroughbreds, the brightest stars, and the most passionate fans. An experience that's a breed apart. Tickets on sale now at breederscup.com/tickets.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence educating and developing industry leaders for over 33 years. Classes are taught by industry experts in the state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
It's time now to shine the spotlight on the Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week.
Averly Jane in front right from the start, and she is going to coast home here in the Skidmore Stakes.
Averly Jane, the 2-year-old daughter of Darley stallion Midshipman, remained undefeated in 3 starts with an impressive 7-length score in the Skidmore Stakes at Saratoga on Friday, earning an 86 buyer. That's the second highest buyer for a 2-year-old filly this year. She is likely headed to the Grade 1 Darley Alcibiades next, and she is your Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week. Darley stallion Midshipman, an Eclipse Champion 2-year-old and record-breaking Breeders' Cup Juvenile winner. Averly Jane is one of 8 stakes winners this year for Midshipman, more than any stallion standing for $25,000 and under. Learn more about Midshipman and all the Darley stallions by visiting DarleyAmerica.com.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Welcome back. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you on this Saturday morning. Told you we were at Hollywood Casino at Charlestown Races last night to broadcast the Charlestown Classic. The tour continues, as after I finish up this morning, I will make my way about 177 miles down to Colonial Downs in New Kent, Virginia, to get ready for Tuesday afternoon's Grade 3 Virginia Derby, the Virginia Oaks part of that. It's a stellar card. Those are just two of the outstanding races that are going to be part of that program on Tuesday afternoon. We'll have 2 hours of coverage from 4:30 to 6:30. It is all presented by the Virginia Thoroughbred Association. And to tell you more about what you can expect, I'm going to welcome in Jill Byrne, who is the Vice President of Racing Operations at Colonial Downs. But before I do, I need to tell you that because of the work that Jill and her team have done at Colonial to resurrect this race and this event and bring it back into national prominence, I thought it was appropriate that Jill and her team be named this week's Industry Star of the Week. And this interview presented by Stuart Morris, who offers a boutique full-service bloodstock operation, and he wants to thank his owners, his clients, his team. He knows his success is because of you. He's had multiple stakes horses over the past several years, and you'll want to make sure you visit the Stuart Morris consignment at all the major sales. And yes, he is the sponsor of our Industry Star of the Week segment every single week here on the Equine Forum. Nobody better than Jill Byrne. Jill, congratulations and good morning.
Well, thank you. That's a great honor. I will pass it on to all the team, and they are certainly very much deserving of that honor and award. It's been incredible work this season and recovering from last year, and to bounce back and just having an incredible race meet. 3 more days to go, so we're not over yet, but I am very fortunate to work with just an amazing team.
Yeah, the best part about that award is it's just me mentioning it on the show. You don't get an award. There's no actual plaque, no trophy. So tell them not to expect one.
No, it's, to be recognized by, peers and industry people that, see the difference that a team makes and what they're trying to do. And, everybody here, it's all about the horse and the horseman. So to be noticed and acknowledged, that is certainly very proud of my team for sure.
Tell me a little bit more about what these past few years have been like and the challenges that you and the team have faced trying to bring everything back to where it is today.
Yeah, well, I think, when you just look at, the word challenge is certainly a good one to throw in the mix with this. It has been challenging but rewarding. And, to be able to turn a track from zero, so to speak, starting from new, in less than 3 years to a Class A Grade 1, so to speak, racetrack with the horses, the horsemen, the product that we're putting out. It usually takes a lot longer for a track to get to that point. So, that's completely because of the great team, and the company that I work with, and being, invested in it, the horsemen, the VHBPA, the commission, everybody that's involved, the stakeholders in Virginia are the ones, the credit for making that happen. But, I just can't say enough the people I work with, but the support of the horsemen. So they've recognized that, I have a team that wants to do the right thing, safety first, our track surfaces are phenomenal, stable area, the conditions, for the dorms and the bathhouses for the staff. So I think that just pulls it all together, and they see that, we're trying and that we're putting the horsemen first, and that's, I think, what's enabled us to get to where we are. But, yeah, we've had some challenges along the way. We deal with Mother Nature on a regular basis. Who doesn't? That we can't control, but other things, it's just, we make it happen, don't you?
When people think about thoroughbred racing and breeding, they think about Kentucky first and foremost, and rightfully so. Many people will think about Ocala, Florida, but Virginia, and Jill, you know this as a proud Virginian. Virginia has such a rich history when it comes to racing and to breeding. Tell me a little bit more about that history.
Well, this is where it all began. The first thoroughbred racing was right here on the shores of Virginia. So it all started right here. And then, you know, you only have to mention one horse in the racing industry to realize the impact Virginia's had, and that's Secretariat. So, you know, the standard's very, very high, but yeah, a lot of horsemen, horse people, this is home, or this is where, you know, the legacies kind of started. So Virginia has an incredible history, the thoroughbred industry, and just, you know, some phenomenal horses even besides Secretariat that have been bred and raised here, and the people too that, you know, call Virginia home or have been based here. So yeah, the history, I mean, Kentucky is the bluegrass state with a great history, and obviously Florida, but it really, you know, if you really want to talk the deep history of thoroughbred racing, it did begin here in Virginia.
We're going to see 11 races on Tuesday. The 10th race will be the Grade 3 Virginia Derby. We'll talk more about that in a minute. But when you travel to different racetracks, Jill, or you talk to horsemen on the phone, what are some of the things that you want them to know about racing their horses at Colonial Downs?
Well, I think it's what I just touched on, that, you know, we're going to provide the safest surface that we can. That's always priority number one. We have an incredible track crew. Our track superintendent, Ken Brown. It's just an incredible crew. So I think to understand that no matter what Mother Nature throws at us, we're going to provide the safest surface we can, make the right decisions always based on the horse, that, you know, they'll be well taken care of in the receiving barn, or if they're stabled here, they have great conditions. And I think the big thing is, you know, that you can come in the racing office, you can, you know, reach out to me, and we're going to do what we can to make their racing experience here as best as we can.
The turf course is so pristine. It looks like a fairway at Augusta National. And it kills me to see the pictures and the videos of the team lighting it on fire every year. But it's necessary, right?
Yes. You know, and it doesn't absolutely have to be done every year. We analyze the soil each year and see, you know, where it stands in the early spring as to what we're going to do. But with it having not been used for so many years, you know, we've now, you know, burned it for 3 years. We'll see if we do the same thing next year, but it's really to, you burn off the old thatch, it's Bermuda grass, and then also burning, as with, you know, you see it in other parts of the country too, and in forests and everything, it does add nutrients back into the ground as well. So it kind of burns off the old, adds some nutrients into the ground, and then the new Bermuda will grow back, but it takes a lot of other work as well to get it to that point. And a lot of maintenance. It's a 180 plus feet wide turf course, so it takes a lot of work, a lot of staff who are dedicated to it. But it is beautiful, and it is like a carpet when you're out there on it. As you know, I'm a runner. I run on it, I walk on it, and it's just an incredible feeling. And a lot of the jockeys who've never ridden on it before that come in, their eyes are as big as saucers once they get off of it. They just can't believe, you know, how incredible the surface it is and how well it holds up to a lot of different conditions.
Visiting with Colonial Downs Vice President of Racing Operations, Jill Byrne, here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, this week's Industry Star of the Week. Jill, tell me more about what folks can expect with that 11-race program on Tuesday.
Yeah, 11 races with post time starting at 1:45 on Tuesday. And we'll have an early pick five, some really good, just really good races on the card, some, you know, nice full fields of maidens on the turf. We've got 14 horse fields, 10 horse fields, 12 horse fields throughout the day, a real variety of races, turf, dirt. And then we get into our all stakes, all turf pick five, which will start in race six with the Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance Old Nelson Stakes, on into the Woodford Reserve Kitten's Joy and Exacta Systems Rosie's, 2 2-year-old races going long and short. And of course, our first running of the Rosie Stakes in 2019, the winner was Four Wheel Drive, who went on to win the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf Sprint. So we're one for one with that race. And looking to, you know, see who might come out of these races. Then we get into the Virginia Oaks and Virginia Derby, and those are two, as of now, 12 horse fields. I'm really excited to see the quality of these races, the quality of the horses, the owners, trainers, jockeys that are coming in to ride. It was a very impressive performance here by Search for Truth for Michael Dickinson. He's coming back in the Virginia Derby. He won very impressively here. You know, just some, it's a good field, very competitive. So the wagering should be a lot of fun for all of these races. But yeah, you know, it's going to be a fun day for people to come out as well. We still have some tickets available, but pretty well sold out. But general admission's free, parking's free. We're going to have a marching band to kick off the national anthem and the color guard here, food trucks for those that are in general admission on the apron. We have a hospitality tent, air conditioned, I might add, large tent that's open to the public, free. So, you know, it's a fun place to come. As you know, it's a very kind of casual, fun experience to come out to the races here. So we're looking forward to having a big crowd and then, of course, everybody watching and wagering online as well.
Yeah, we're very fortunate. As part of our two-hour broadcast window, we're going to be able to catch four of those stakes races. The Kitten's Joy as race number seven. We'll catch the Exacta Systems Rosie Stakes. We'll catch the Virginia Oaks and the Virginia Derby. And it's going to be Sirius 219 XM 201 is where people can tune in, and, of course, worldwide on our website. But Joe, when you talk about that Virginia Oaks and Virginia Derby, those two races, big fields, quality fillies, quality colts, you have to be thrilled with the way that the fields came together.
Oh, absolutely. And that's the thing. It's the support, you know, of the trainers, of owners that are coming in for all of these races. We have a lot of people shipping in from out of town. So I think, you know, understanding that, you know, the importance of these races, the quality of the turf course here to run over, the experience that they're going to have, you know, when they get here. And, you know, that's what we're looking to do, is just really just keep maintaining and showing, you know, the racing industry that Colonial Downs is completely invested in the industry and really, you know, putting on a top-class production here, top-class racing and experience for everybody. So now I couldn't be more excited. Very, you know, just incredibly proud of our racing team and Shane Burke, our stakes coordinator, who's just worked so hard to get these kind of horses here to come and compete at Colonial Downs.
People will hear us talk about the business side of it, and you've done a great job laying things out and talking about everything that went in to building this back up again. But, Jill, you are also a really good handicapper, and you enjoy going through and looking at the races. Have you spent any time looking at the Virginia Oaks or Virginia Derby yet?
Not from a handicapping perspective. That's a part of my former life that I don't get a lot of opportunity to do anymore, as everything else takes up, you know, all of my time. But I'm in the paddock for every single race and down there on the track for every single race, watching every second of it. And I'll really, you know, I'll hopefully spend some time, maybe a little bit Monday evening or so, taking a look at these. A lot of them I know because a lot of them raced here during the meet, so looking forward to seeing them return. But, yeah, unfortunately, I don't get a lot of opportunity to handicap, excuse me, and, of course, you know, can't place a wager. If so, I would have made a lot of money the other day on Mr. Jefferson at 9-1, a homage to my alma mater, University of Virginia. So, you know, it's been a lot of fun, and I just love being able to see all these, you know, quality horses and everybody here.
Yeah, it's going to be a fantastic day of racing, a who's who of thoroughbred racing on Tuesday afternoon at Colonial Downs. We'll be there with all the coverage, again, 4:30 to 6:30 Eastern, presented by the Virginia Thoroughbred Association. Jill, appreciate the visit and can't wait to see you there in a few days.
Yeah, I'm overlooking right now your spot, which overlooks the paddock just as before. So you got a great spot overlooking the paddock and the racetrack. What more could you want, right?
Nothing. It's spectacular. We can't wait to get there. I'll see you in a few days.
All right. We'll see you in a couple days.
All right. Jill Byrne here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. And, yeah, I remember 2019 was our first visit to Colonial. And the one thing that strikes you when you walk in, well, first of all, it's a really quaint little racetrack. It's kind of set out there away from everything else. I was surprised at how long it took us to get out there to it. It was about 20 minutes from the airport or so, so it wasn't that bad. But I thought it was closer, and it wasn't. But the cool thing is it's kind of, you know, Keeneland used to say racing as it was meant to be, right? Well, this setting is a setting that you just picture. This is how racing was supposed to be, because it is just quiet and quaint, and the horses love it. The horsemen love it. And then you see that beautiful emerald green turf course, which it really is. I describe it as being like a fairway at Augusta. It is spectacular, and they do a great job maintaining it. The horsemen love it. The jockeys love riding over it, and it's all part of what is going to be a spectacular afternoon on Tuesday, so make sure you're tuned into the coverage. Again, Sirius 219, XM 201, and streaming worldwide at horseracingradio.net. That comes your way 4:30 to 6:30 Eastern. When I come back, I will welcome in John Sadler, who is on the West Coast. He's going to talk about Flagstaff going in today's Pat O'Brien. He'll look ahead to Rock Your World in tomorrow's Shared Belief. That's next on the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on HRRN.
Kentucky Downs is home to the best turf racing in America and attracts the largest fields in the country, competing for over $15 million in purses over 6 days, making it the largest prize money available in thoroughbred racing due to the addition of KTDF funds. Sign up for Kentucky Downs Turf Handicapping Challenge presented by DRF and win NHC and BCBC entries, as well as a chance to be crowned the Bet Makers King of the Turf. For more information on how to sign up, visit kingoftheturf.com.
Hey everyone, it's the Baron with this week's North of the Border report presented by Woodbine Entertainment. Emmeline, runner-up in this year's Woodbine Oaks, goes after top prize in this afternoon's $250,000 Bison City Stakes. The Bison City, a mile and a 16th feature that follows the Woodbine Oaks as the second leg of the Triple Tierra for Canadian-bred three-year-old fillies, attracted a field of six starters. Bred by the late William Graham, the daughter of Violence arrives at the Bison City off three consecutive runner-up efforts, including a game performance in the Oaks, and will once again have Emma Jane Wilson in the irons. The Ontario bred launched her career with a pair of starts last August at Woodbine, both yielding fourth place results, and concluded her two-year-old campaign with a third place finish at 57-1 in the mile and a 16th main track Princess Elizabeth Stakes. Her current three-race runner-up streak began with her three-year-old debut on June 19th. The always formidable dual Hall of Fame conditioner Mark Cassie is back as well. He won three straight editions of the Bison City from 2017 to 2019 and has entered Miss Speedy, who will have the services of jockey Gary Boulanger. The $250,000 Wonder Wear Stakes is the final leg of the Triple Tierra, and that's scheduled for a mile and a quarter on the E.P. Taylor Turf Course on October 2nd at Woodbine. First post for today is 1:10 p.m. Fans can watch and wager on all the races with HPIBet.com. And that's your North of the Border report for this Saturday morning. For more updates and racing information, visit Woodbine.com or follow along on Twitter at WoodbineTB.
Hi, this is Larry Colmus, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
They come into the quarter pole now in the big one. Tis a Magician is the leader. Tripoli hooks off the fence, and Tripoli's going to come to tackle them. Independence Hall, Royal Ship plugging away in the red cap, and then Cupid's Claws. And now Dr. Post is starting to wind up, but he's given himself a tall order. Homeward bound in the Pacific Classic, and Tripoli strikes the front and kicks on strongly. And it's Tripoli starting to draw clear now. Tis a Magician is again second, but it's Tripoli in front as they run to the wire. And Tripoli and Tiago Pereira have won the Pacific Classic. Tis a Magician second. Dr. Post got going far, far too late. Did get up for third.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum. Trevor Denman with the call of last weekend's Pacific Classic. It was a third win in four tries for trainer John Sadler in that particular stakes race. And Tripoli did it in upset fashion. I'm going to talk to John coming up here in just a couple of moments. He will saddle Flagstaff in today's Pat O'Brien. He will saddle Rock Your World in tomorrow's Shared Belief against the Derby winner Medina Spirit. We'll talk more about that in just a couple of moments. But first, I want to bring you this week's edition of the Kentucky Bred Update, which is presented by the KTA KTOB. And remember, when you race in Kentucky, you're reaping the rewards of breeding and racing in the state. How about these numbers? 122,655,688. That's the purse money in Kentucky, which hit an all-time high in 2020, significantly higher than California at $104 million, Florida $106 million, and New York at $110 million. 78,125. What does that number mean? Well, that's the average purse per race in Kentucky in 2020, which far outpaced Florida, California, and New York. 8.8, the average field size in Kentucky in 2020, higher than California, New York, and Florida. And over $170 million has been distributed to Kentucky breeders since 2006. That is a huge number. And with purse money soaring, thanks to the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund, the fullest fields in the country, and quality racing year-round, there is absolutely no better time to breed and race in the bluegrass than right now. You can find your Kentucky bred at the Keeneland September sale, which comes up September 13th to the 24th, and you can share in the rewards that you can benefit from racing in Kentucky. For more information, visit KentuckyBreds.com or KBIF.KHRC@KY.gov. Yeah, great time to race in Kentucky. Man, those numbers. Are you kidding me? $78,000, the average purse in Kentucky in 2020. It's only going to get better because you got Kentucky Downs coming up. I'm going to talk more about them next week, but those purses are ridiculous. Huge. And the fields are going to be fantastic. And then you've got, of course, Ellis Park still ongoing. And then you've got Churchill Downs, Keeneland. Come on. Just great racing here in the Bluegrass State. John Sadler knows that. He knows it's pretty good at Del Mar, too. He's going to be with me momentarily. We are efforting John Sadler to join us here. Looking forward to that visit. He won the Pacific Classic in 2018 with Accelerate. Came back in 2019 with Higher Power. Won it last Saturday with Tripoli. I'll get a chance to talk to John. All three of those wins, by the way, for his longtime client, Hieronis Racing. And that's a great relationship, too. I'm looking forward to talking to him about Hieronis Racing and the success that they have had. John has a couple of, well, he has Flagstaff in the Pat O'Brien today. That's a win and you're in for the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile. Flagstaff gets a showdown with his rival, CZ Rocket. They're going to break side-by-side. Flagstaff's in post 8, CZ Rocket post 9. CZ Rocket 5-2 on the morning line, Flagstaff 3-1, but the recency edge goes to CZ Rocket. He started July 31st in the Grade 1 Bing Crosby, finished 3rd, beaten a neck as the favorite. Flagstaff, haven't seen him in action since June 4th. That was in the Grade 2 True North at Belmont. And, you know, this I threw this out if you're just joining us and you didn't catch this at the beginning of the show. I thought this was a really interesting fact as it pertained to Flagstaff. This is going to be his 6th start of 2021. It's his first in his home state, his home base of California. Started his campaign in February at Oaklawn, ran twice there, went to Keeneland, went to Churchill, went to Belmont. Now he finally comes back home. Going to ask John about that schedule, too. Interesting. Maybe he feels like those were the best opportunities for Flagstaff earlier in the year and throughout the spring and into the early summer. But now as he gets to focus on getting this horse to the Breeders' Cup in November, which will be at Del Mar, he has an opportunity to get him back home, get him back in action, and I would assume, I could be wrong, but again, we'll ask John, I would assume keep him out in California now as he gets ready for the Breeders' Cup World Championships. We're getting ready, too. November 5th and 6th at Del Mar, we'll be there. We're going to be there, actually, all week long. We'll bring you our Breeders' Cup countdown shows beginning on Tuesday, the Tuesday before the Breeders' Cup. We'll bring you those shows, 2 hours every morning live from the track. We'll have interviews with owners and trainers and breeders and jockeys, handicappers, everything you need to get ready to bet the Breeders' Cup World Championships Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday morning with the Breeders' Cup countdown shows. Friday, we come back with every Breeders' Cup race here on the network. Saturday, the same thing. Plus, this Equine Forum show is the Breeders' Cup edition. That's Saturday morning. So we are your home for the Breeders' Cup all week long. Can't wait to get back to Del Mar. It was so much fun when we were there a few years ago. And I know John Sadler is looking forward to big things from his horses as he makes his way down the road to the Breeders' Cup. John is with me now. He's joining me early out in California. I say early because it's early for me. It's not early for him. He's a horse trainer. John, good morning.
Good morning.
You've been at work for a few hours already, haven't you?
About 3.5.
And wait, it's 6:44 out there.
Yeah, well, the track opens here at 4:30, so I like to be here at 4 because we like to walk the horses and check them before we go to the racetrack. And I feel the best track at Del Mar is the early track. It's got a lot of moisture in it. And, you know, we got a lot of breaks here, so you gotta really march.
Well, you're marching to a very good beat right now, coming off of that big win, your third in the last 4 years in the Pacific Classic. That was with Tripoli last week. Share your thoughts on that performance. It was pretty good.
Yeah, it was really good. We were thrilled to death. You know, he'd run two really good races on dirt. You know, first time we put him on dirt, his numbers changed. You know, he really ran well on dirt, and we come back into San Diego because he, you know, a 3,000 three times doesn't feel very good around here, and he ran a big second running at the end. So, you know, we thought we kind of fit with this group, and the question would be the distance, and he handled the distance no problem. So, it's just like everything, you know, everything we were hoping for came true. He ran like we were hoping he would. And just a really nice day, a good story. Thiago, you know, smaller time jockey, gets an opportunity in a big race and he capitalizes on it. So, very happy.
Your first win in the Pacific Classic came with Accelerate in 2018. You came back with Higher Power the following year, and now Tripoli. What do all three of those horses have in common? Well, it's the ownership group of Hronas Racing. Talk about that relationship, John. That has just been fantastic for you.
It's been wonderful. We got together, you know, whatever it is, 8 or 9 or 10 years ago, or I don't even remember now, but we liked each other right away. I like them. They've got some Pasadena roots, and I've got some Pasadena roots, and we're talking about the Rose Parade and you know, Pasadena things, and it seemed like a good fit. And, you know, we started off claiming some horses and then just grew up from there. And knock on wood, it's going stronger than ever.
Yeah, it's a wonderful relationship. They are also involved, along with Lane's End Racing, in Flagstaff, who you'll send out later today in the Pat O'Brien. Second choice on the morning line, making his first start since the True North at Belmont on June 4th. What are you seeing from Flagstaff?
Really in a good spot today. He's got a good draw. He can track the speed a little bit from the outside. You know, he run a really good number up there in New York, so we wanted to give him a little spacing off the True North, and he's got it and trained up good. You know, to me, he's one of the horses right in there. You know, hopefully gets a good trip and everything like that. Good field as usual, you know, and you know, we were second in it last year to CZ Rocket, so hopefully we can turn the tables this year.
Yeah, it's a great rivalry. You know, I was talking with Ronnie Moquet in the first hour of the program, talking about Whitmore, and he was talking about Whitmore winning the Forgo at Saratoga in 2018. Yeah. Well, CZ Rocket was fourth in that race that year. These sprinters, man, they just keep running, and they're hickory, and you can keep them going for a long time.
Well, he like I said, this horse at Gelding, like those other ones. So his life is at the track. He's been really, and he's just been solid for us. He didn't have a lot of races as a young horse. He had a few things go wrong and was late getting there. So, you know, we've always had a really patient ownership group. When I've had to give him time off, he's gotten time off. So he's really, really a nice horse. And, you know, he's a half brother to Game Winner. So I think he fills up that page pretty good for him too.
I mentioned earlier that this will be his sixth start of 2021, but his first in his home state or his home base of California. Tell me about his schedule this year. Was that by design?
Yeah, it was. We thought he'd be, good at Oaklawn and then dip down into Kentucky because we were stable at Oaklawn this winter. He wasn't lucky at Oaklawn. He caught a really muddy track the first time, and it was kind of, that severe weather, so it was a little bit hampered. But we shipped him down to Keeneland for the Commonwealth, and he won really nicely under Joel. And he came back and won on Derby Day. So, he's a good horse for the road. If they run well out of town, we'll be there. So he's run well wherever he's run. And then, he caught a really tough horse at Friends and Fire, a Belmont horse. It's terrific on that track and really, really run a nice, probably his best race in the True North. So now it's time to prep here at Del Mar and see how it goes today and then look towards the Breeders' Cup down the line.
Talking with trainer John Sadler here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. John, I know it's busy on Saturday mornings, any morning for you, so I won't keep you much longer, but I do want to ask you about Rock Your World, who returns in tomorrow's Shared Belief at Del Mar. Medina Spirit, the Derby winner, also coming back in that race. Tell me more about Rock Your World and what you're seeing from him.
Yeah, really trained well down here. I was originally looking at the Del Mar Derby, and he got to training so well on the dirt down here, I'm going to switch him over to the dirt. He had a couple of missteps in the Triple Crown, so this is a chance for him to step forward, get back in the spotlight again, show his real ability. And he looks great, training great, so we're excited about tomorrow, and, what a good feature. You get the Santa Anita Derby winner and the Kentucky Derby winner, next to each other. They're going to line up there tomorrow afternoon and slug it out. So looks like a really fun race to watch. They're never easy here when you're running the stakes out here. But both nice horses. So we just want to get him back where, a really good, strong effort. So I'm excited about tomorrow.
Yeah, I said the same thing earlier in the show. I don't think that race is getting the attention it deserves, and I don't know if it's because of the circumstances surrounding Medina Spirit and the uncertainty of is he going to remain the Derby winner. I don't know, but for some reason, that race to me deserves more attention than what it's getting.
Well, on our circuit here, Del Mar has primarily got turf for the three-year-olds. So this is really the only dirt stakes. So they get a lot of value out of it every year. The horses that turn up in this race, it used to be called the El Cajon. You get some really good three-year-olds on the dirt here. So even though the purse is not that much, it's always a good race. I think I won this race with Accelerate, I think, at 1 year also. So it's a good field.
Well, John, enjoy the weekend. Again, I know you're busy. I'll let you go. Thanks so much for a little time, and good luck this weekend.
All right. Take care.
All right, John Sadler here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. That race, and again, I don't know what it is, but I haven't seen it. Maybe I'm missing it. I don't know. But I haven't seen as much buzz about the Derby winner coming back as I think you normally would. I think if you didn't have this cloud hanging over Medina Spirit right now because of the investigations and the controversies and everything else that's going on, and the uncertainty as to whether he's actually going to be the 2021 Derby winner when it's all said and done, nobody's making that big of a deal about this horse coming back. But for now, sitting here on August 28th, he is still the Kentucky Derby winner. And I think it's noteworthy that he's returning to action. And as John pointed out, the showdown between the Derby winner and the Santa Anita Derby winner is a good one. I'm excited about it. That's the Shared Belief. It's tomorrow at Del Mar, 9:20 Eastern, 6:20 Pacific. That's race number 9. And, of course, today you've got the Pat O'Brien, the win, and you're in for the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile, which comes up at 9:35 Eastern Time tonight, 6:35 locally on the West Coast. That is the 10th race on the program this afternoon. All right, I'm going to get to a break. I'll get you set for hour number 3. A lot of great things still to come in the third hour of the program. I'll tell you all about it next on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Woodford Feed, where tradition merges with technology.
Family owned since 1940 and providing exceptional customer service, Woodford Feed specializes in the highest quality feed, using only the finest ingredients to ensure optimal nutrition for your horses. In addition, Woodford Feed can help with all your farm needs, including field seed, fertilizer, and weed control. So whether your horse is sprinting around the racetrack or has a foal by her side, count on Woodford Feed to provide the quality nutrition necessary to perform at the highest level. Woodford Feed, Versailles, Kentucky.
The National HBPA is continuously working to protect the health and welfare of horses by advocating and funding research to help reduce equine injuries, lobbying for a national testing lab to oversee and establish absolute uniform laboratory protocols, advocating for every track to undergo an annual independent surface assessment, passionately supporting off-the-track thoroughbred retirement facilities and adoption groups, and so much more. See additional HBPA initiatives at nationalhbpa.com.
James Brown and Bill Cowher welcoming you back to Dennis Melvin's house. It's time for the Midnight Snack Run.
This is one tricky obstacle course. Sticking to healthy habits in this kitchen is going to take focus and determination, but it can be done, JB.
He's already entered the snack part of the course, and he's eyeballing a jar of chocolatey candy.
That is tempting right off the start.
Uh-oh, he's reaching, Bill. But he pushes it away.
Great stiff arm.
He's approaching a plate of delicious-looking iced cookies.
Oh, Dennis, you only want one of those?
He blows right by him for the apple.
Oh, the fridge. It's make or break time, JB.
He stares down some rich-looking treats. Uh-oh, looks like he's headed for the soda. Wait, he jukes left, grabs the water bottle, and shuts the door with his elbow in record time.
Unbelievable move. I gotta see that again.
And he's out. He even turned off the light.
That's the way you execute a midnight snack run.
Stand Up to Cancer and Rally want you to reduce your risk for cancer.
Go to takeahealthystand.org.
I'm Nyheim Hines, professional football player. No matter the challenges I face every day in the NFL, my mom is always there for me, despite her own struggles with muscular dystrophy. And MDA is there for my mom. At their 150 care centers across the U.S., MDA is the leading organization in research and care for kids and adults with muscular dystrophy, ALS, and related neuromuscular diseases. Join me and learn more at helpmda.org today. Thank you.
Get to know the men and women who make this sport go on Trainer Talk, presented by Facig Tipton. Mike Pena sits down with Hall of Famers, up-and-comers, and everyone in between with an intimate conversation that goes beyond the X's and O's. Hear their stories every Wednesday evening at 6 p.m. Eastern on Sirius 219 XM 201 or streaming live at horseracingradio.net. It's the show that trainers listen to. Trainer Talk, presented by Facig Tipton, only on HRRN.
Hi, it's Ian Wilkes here, and you're listening to HRRN Radio.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Well, today's poll question, so many of you taking time to weigh in at HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. And by the way, if you don't do social media, just email me your response. You can do that, mike@horseracingradio.net. You can always get in touch with the show that way. Pretty simple. Who is your pick to win today's Travers Stakes? And I decided to leave it open-ended to let you choose anybody you would like. If you like an upsetter at the Graveyard of Champions, if you like the favorite Essential Quality, let me know that too. But who is your pick to win today's Travers Stakes? I have time to read a couple of those. Andrew says, can't really pick against Essential Quality, but I'll throw Miles D out there. That's a long shot. Realize he finished second to Dynamic One in the Curlin, but that was his first trip around two turns. He gets Pratt. And the ascending buyer pattern indicates he's on the improve with more upside potential than Dynamic One. I like the analysis, Andrew. Well done. Skip Anderson says Essential Quality with Brad Cox Racing snapping his fingers as he crosses the finish line. Yeah, kind of become a signature, hasn't it? Bob says Essential Quality, baby, or EQ, baby. I like that. So we'll see if Essential Quality does indeed get it done as the favorite in the Midsummer Derby. It's going to be a good one. Really is. What a card that is today. I told you, five Eclipse Award winners on that program this afternoon. That's going to do it for the second hour of today's show, but still plenty more to come in hour number three, which begins in just a moment with our weekly edition of In the Room with Sean Clancy. He sits down with veteran jockey David Flores for his always unique one-on-one jockey-to-jockey conversation. They talk about a whole bunch of different topics. Don't miss it. At 10:30, Kurt Becker takes you on his weekly stroll through racing history. And I wrap up the show at 10:40 by welcoming French turf writer John Gilmore to share his thoughts on the recent Win in Your Inn races contested in France. That comes your way in our weekly Road to the Breeders' Cup segment. If your local station is leaving us at this time, you can continue listening to the third hour nationwide, Sirius 219, XM 201, or on horseracingradio.net. Hour 3 of the Equine Forum is next, right after I pause 10 seconds for station identification. This is HRN.
From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
It's still Holy Bull desperately trying to hold. Concerned of final threat, but it is Holy Bull. As game as a racehorse can be coming down to the wire, Holy Bull wins! What a hero!
Street Sense is full up. They're still head-to-head for the lead. Street Sense in a desperate struggle here with Grasshopper. Street Sense and Grasshopper. Under the line, and Straight Sense prevails.
Welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
It is Arrowgate and Mike Smith. Oh, they've opened up a six-length lead here with one furlong to run. They've left the field reeling behind. American Freedom and Gunrunner are fired behind Arrowgate. What a commanding performance. He won the Travers by 12.
Tis the Law has a four-length lead. He's left the others behind. It's Tis the Law. He won the Belmont Stakes. He's going to win the run, Happy Travers. And now it's on to Kentucky as the favorite in the Derby. Here he is, Saratoga's hometown hero, Tis the Law.
Now here's Mike Pena.
Welcome back, everyone. Hour number 3 of the Equine Forum rolling on. It has been a very busy show. We've covered a lot of ground talking about racing at Saratoga, at Del Mar, at Colonial Downs coming up on Tuesday. Took a look at the big races at Gulfstream later today. That's why this is the best radio show in the industry. Mike Pena, Baron of the Backstretch, feeling a little froggy as I kick off the third hour this morning. Happy to have you back with me. And really, it has been a fun show. I've had a chance to visit with Tim Wilkin from the Albany Times Union. At least, well, he's a retired turf writer, but he's working for the Albany Times Union in Saratoga. He's one of the best in the business. He previewed the Travers Stakes for you in the first segment of the show. Ron Moquette was with me. Fantastic stuff about his gelded warrior, Whitmore. That was at 8:35. Ralph Nix was with me from Gulfstream Park at 9 o'clock. You heard Jill Byrne, the vice president of racing operations at Colonial Downs, and John Sadler just a short time ago. If you missed any portion of this program, any of those interviews, and you want to go back and listen, you're able to do that on our website, horseracingradio.net, right after I finish up at 11 o'clock Eastern time. Our producer, Lee Delapina, will have it posted on our website for you so you can go back and check out the replay at your leisure as you get set for a massive weekend of thoroughbred racing. And, you know, I feel like we're going to be saying that a lot over the course of the next couple of months because you're going to start getting into, I mentioned Kentucky Downs, and I'll talk more about that meet next week here on the program, but you're going to get into Kentucky Downs. Then you're going to roll right in to Keeneland and Belmont's fall meet and all those big Breeders' Cup prep races. Santa Anita getting ready to kick things off in a few weeks. Churchill Downs. I mean, it's just going to keep coming in waves now, and it's going to build to a crescendo as we get closer to the Breeders' Cup World Championships, which, in case you're wondering, I know, haven't given you a countdown in a couple of hours. 69 days, 7 hours, 46 minutes away from the Breeders' Cup World Championships at Del Mar. We will be there for the 15th consecutive year. Proud to say we are your exclusive radio home of the Breeders' Cup World Championships. Poll question today. Gave you a couple of responses in that last segment, but the poll question, if you haven't already done so, go to our Twitter feed or Facebook to cast your vote. Who is your pick to win today's Travers Stakes. You can do that at HRRN on Twitter or Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. And if you're not a social media person, email me, mike@horseracingradio.net. All right, well, this third hour kicks off with our weekly in-the-room conversation. Sean Clancy, retired jockey, goes in the room to sit down with a rider each week in this segment. And some of those visits have just been so, so good. And today's is no exception. Sean sits down with veteran jockey David Flores as he goes in the room.
Awesome Jim, David Flores, David Flores, Awesome Jim win!
David Flores has won the Malibu.
David Flores to win the 2010 Illinois Derby at Hawthorne.
David Flores, David Flores, David Flores.
This is In the Room with Sean Clancy.
Sean Clancy, and I'm in the room with jockey David Flores. I would have said retired jockey, but he came back and had a good second the other day. Take me through the process of coming back and riding a race at 53.
Well, Sean, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here with you. And, yeah, I've been retired officially from racing as a jockey, but I've been active. You know, I've been breaking babies. And then the season is over for me in about May. From breaking babies, and I breed babies and the two little cells, so that keep me in a good shape. But Wesley, he keep calling me, "Hey, you gotta come with me. You gotta come with me to Belmont." So I did. I come to Belmont, and I was the assistant trainer for him over there, which I didn't have a chance to ride over there. But I wanted to, but I was, you know, I said like, "That's perfect. I breed all the horses, and I should keep working." So being active, I think, is one of the things that, you know, like I have opportunity here to, for Wesley, he said that they have a horse for me to ride. I said, sure, you know, I have no problem. So, but breezing a lot of horses helps, you know, so I get to ride this horse and it feel like I never left. It's not the same, you know, 53 and just, it's not the same. I got to say, it is not the same, but I'm very grateful that I feel still in good shape and I keep myself I work out a little bit, so I don't want to look like, you know, I don't want to look like I'm really, really tired or something. But it's a privilege to be able to be my age and still doing it, you know, like once in a while. But anyway, Wesley he's pretty much the one that they put in my head that I was going to ride one horse, so I had to be ready for it. And if I have another opportunity to ride, you know, of course.
So what's different? Is it mentally, physically? What feels different?
It's more physically, you know. Mentally, man, I had dreams that I'm winning races and all these, but when it comes to be there physically, and it's just, it's definitely physically. Mentally, we probably think that we can still do it and all these ideas, but no, it's not the same. But when you have a good horse, it put you back, and the adrenaline kicks in, and it's a magic. So I believe the horse makes a difference too.
Yeah, what was it like being in the gate again? I mean, you get that same adrenaline feeling? I guess so, right?
I was excited. I was ready, and then I got a bad start. I got bumped out of the gate, and that put me back in a bad spot. And I'm thinking, this horse is so small that he got bumped so hard. And, boy, I was feel sorry for him. But I took my time, and I kind of let him get in the stride, and finally got him out. And seemed like when I got him out, it looked like I pointed him out there, and he feel like he had something in the tank. So I was patient, and when it was time to go, I asked him, and he was responding. And I'm thinking, boy, I have a chance. You know, and that's the kind of mentality we gotta have. We have a chance, and when I didn't see it till the top of the stretch, when I saw the horse, the eight horse, on the lead, I'm thinking, oh boy, we in trouble here. But at least I encourage him, and I try my best at least to run a good second.
Hey, you look good, buddy. I promise you, you were strong. You didn't override. You didn't. It was actually, you looked like the David Flores of old.
Well, I appreciate it, Sean. That definitely means a lot to me, and I guess that gives me hope maybe to win another race sometime.
Take me back to the beginning. Dad rode races and galloped horses. Was it something you always wanted to do from early age?
Yeah, you know, I was born around horses, and by the time I got on a horse, I was 4 years old, and since then, I remember I just fell in love with the animals, and it was natural, I guess, for me to have the privilege to have a dad that it was a cowboy, it was a horseman, so he gave me I would say the foundation, the basics, and I was 16 when he decided that I was going to be a jockey, and I said, okay, you know, because I went 42 races and a mesh races outside the track. And so that, it came easier for me. And I don't even know, to be honest, that what I was doing till I rode, I think, for the first 5 years, I think this is what I'm going to do for the rest of my days. So, it's just, I guess it was there in... That was a blessing.
So your first ride, first winner was Agua Caliente in Mexico, is that right?
Agua Caliente, March, I was March 3rd in 1984 with Swift Dog. It was, the trainer was Wes Kane. I remember I had a contract with Jesus Zapata, which he was a trainer that he helped me in apprentice. And my agent, he entered a horse with me against the contract, and they got fined, my agent and the trainer that I rode for, that I was riding for, and I got suspended 2 weeks, but I won the race.
It was worth it.
It was worth it. Yeah.
What was racing like in Agua Caliente? Had to be very different than America.
Yes, it definitely was rough, I would say, but I earned my respect with all the riders, because I was very small and they were afraid to, not afraid, but they were just, they look after me because I was so light. I was about 80 pounds and they knew I was not able to control a horse sometimes, and they just kind of let me. And, but then it was a time when they start getting a little more aggressive, I start getting a little stronger, and they say, okay, now, you know, yeah, they can put you over the fence with, no problem. And that was one of those tracks, you know. I got to be in good terms with everybody, so I can, when I need help, they were there for me. But I was trying to be too smart. They take care of business. They were serious.
Yeah, the Jockstrom self-policing kind of place, right?
Yes, that's pretty much the way it was, yeah.
And that takes us to the move to California. When did you go to California? How did you know you were ready to go to California?
It was a dream come true for me, because I used to watch the races from Caliente, and I used to watch Lafitte, Eddie D, the Shoemaker at that time, Fernando Toro. I mean, great riders, you know. And I was kind of dreaming, you know, one day I want to be riding with these guys. Just one time. That's all I wanted, just be there one time. And in 1889, I came to Santa Anita, and I met Juan Garcia is the one that he told me to go to his son, Victor Garcia, and ask him if I was going to be able to ride a horse. And they put me on a horse. That's how I got my license. And I had a great agent that he was very supportive, and he told me, you know what, we're going to be okay. So she's got to start here, and so hopefully we do well. And I rode a horse for Alfredo Marquez in Los Alamitos, and I finished second. And then I went to Del Mar, and I rode a horse for Jose Silva, and I finished second. And that got into everybody's eyes, because it was long shots. And that's what got me in. And when I finished second, I was like, wow. That was the different, I would say the quality of horses, it makes a big difference. Because in Caliente, we used to ride from the gate, you know, just keep riding all the way. And then when we got to California or Del Mar, it was like you just kind of let the horse float and save, because the pace was stronger. It was just the kind of riders that were there. It was very tight, and I had to watch out for myself and learn from these guys. But it was very exciting, because I remember the day I rode at Del Mar. I was looking after Lafitte, I mean, I was behind Lafitte and Shoemaker going to the paddock. And I was so excited. I was not thinking about anything else, but because I was like, wow, I'm riding with these guys, you know? I didn't speak English by then, I remember. And I walked into the paddock, and I was lost. And then I remember Jose said, hey, come over here, way over here. So he got me on a horse, and I'll tell you what, my dream, I was dreaming. And finished second that day. It was amazing. And I was looking, and then I was like, man, I want to ride another one. And I went back to Caliente. I rode that weekend in Caliente, and then I got my agent said that I was going to ride another horse that Wednesday, and I rode a couple, and then somehow Fernando Valenzuela, he went down three times. He went down the first race, he went down in the third race, and then he went down in the sixth race, and then he had a horse in the last race for his father, Martin Valenzuela, and he asked me, his brother, Martin Jr., he asked me, hey, are you want to ride that horse in the last race? I said, well, I don't have anything. I mean, I wasn't going to ride today. He said, oh, don't worry. You just use my brother's equipment or saddles. I said, okay. So everything from his brother, that's what I used to ride that horse. It was 60-1, and I won. I won, and I still remember like it was yesterday. I won that race. I was so happy, and then that was it. Then I went to ride the following week, that weekend to Tijuana, and I told my ballot in Tijuana, I said, in Caliente, I said, listen, that's it. I'm leaving. He said, what do you mean? I said, yeah, I'm done. I want to go to ride it to Del Mar, and I chased my dream, you know. I followed my dream, and, you know, here we are. I had no idea what I was going to, you know, the future, what was going to be like on my career. And that's a blessing, you know. You got to chase your dream.
Yeah, and you chased your dream all the way to the top. I mean, 3,600 and some wins and horses like Siphon and Marquetry and those kind of horses. I mean, you accomplished what you wanted to accomplish.
Absolutely. I have a lot of friends that, they guide me in the right directions as a jockey. And I asked, you know, like Lafitte. I was afraid, to be honest, to these guys. I was kind of scared, you know, because they were intimidating. But at the same time, the ability that God gives us, you know, some of us, when we break from that gate, it's like myself before everybody else, you know. I had to do my best to beat these guys, and it happened, and I was able to win three races at Del Mar, you know. And a kid that come from Tijuana and don't know what's going on here, don't speak English at all, and my agent, he was the one that helped me a lot. He was working for Lazaro Barrera, and he was the one that give me a great guidance, and it translated to me. And so we went to Pomona that year, 1989, from Del Mar, and I became my first title in the bull ring, and that opens the doors, you know. So, you know, thanks for for. Take me back, you know, where I started. So it's a privilege.
Who was the best horse you ever rode?
You know, that's one of the questions that now I get. I'm very happy to answer that. Is Senyera. Senyera was an amazing horse. Yeah,
you rode the first three times.
Yeah, first three times, and I can say the way she ran the first time, she did it every single time. She just amazed me how she accelerated, and she just know when to do it, you know. And I can be like, start pushing, and she's like, not yet, not yet. And all of a sudden, you just feel that power, you know. And yeah, that was. I don't know if I ever gonna see another horse like that.
It had to be difficult to not ride her through the rest of her career. How tough was that for you mentally?
You know, the story, I mean, if I go to the story, it's you know, it's tough because I was doing great during that year, and I have the same agent with Mike Smith, Brad Pigram, and we had a good business together. And, you know, I was riding a horse for Craig DeLazzi, West Point horse, El Gato Malo, which he was doing good, that horse. And he was running in the Santa Anita Derby. And then the same race, the same day, I'm saying, it was the Apple Blossom, which John Sheriff, he was saying that he was going to run that field in the Apple Blossom. But I'm thinking, okay, she's four. And then I had the Derby fever. I want to ride this horse. Maybe I win this horse, and maybe I go to the Derby with him. So, and the filly, I mean, you know, it's Mike. Originally, it was Mike Smith's horse to begin with. So I didn't feel bad that Mike was riding it because, you know, he was working her before I even rode her. So I have no idea about this horse. And Brad, he put me on that horse, and Mike Smith, they said that I was going to ride this filly. So I was very lucky to ride it the first three times. So he got it back in the Apple Blossom. And after when she won that easy over there, I was like, uh-oh, that's a horse, you know, that's a horse. It's like, oh, well, you know, but we are good friends. And he was long ways. He was working this filly before I got on her. So it was just a privilege to ride a horse like that.
Yeah, and that's the game. I mean, the ups and downs and the moves you make. I mean, there's you never know which good horse or what's coming around the corner, right? I mean, that's life as a jockey.
Yes, that's just the way it is as a jockey. I mean, I breeze a lot of horses for Bobby Franco and Bob Buffer, and I had no idea when I was going to ride who or anything like that. So I was just very 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 grateful that I was learning and I was in the spot where I had the opportunity to learn from good horses and good trainers. And anytime I get to ride any big horses, which I have a lot, you know, good horses that I rode. And there's times that I pick up horses from other jocks. So it's, you know, it's both ways. So it's one of those things, you know.
And the Fanticipate question of the day, who was your biggest fan growing up or riding or throughout your career? Who was your biggest fan?
Like I said, my dad. My dad, he was my teacher. It was everything to me. You know, he stayed with me until he passed. He was 92. So he was old man when I was a kid riding, you know, but he was the best. Anything that I had to, I would say, I'm very grateful that he spent his time and his patience to teach me just what I need. And then after I was riding for a few years, he says, you know, from here, it's on your own. Actually, on my second year when I was riding, from here on, it's on you. Whatever you learn, it's on you. So you got to do, always got to do better for yourself. And, I miss him. I miss him.
Yeah, that's a great lesson from your dad, right? That's what dads are meant to teach you.
Absolutely. I mean, he knew that I was going to be a jockey since I was a little kid. I had no idea. But he probably see a vision. He had a vision, and you know, I was. It's a privilege. Yeah, it's a privilege.
That's David Flores.
What a privilege to have David Flores on that segment with Sean Clancy this morning. Great stuff. Fantastic visit. If you missed it, don't worry. You can go back and listen to the entire conversation in just a little bit. It will be posted on our website, horseracingradio.net. We actually have a special page for all of those in-the-room conversations that Sean has had with Ramon Dominguez and Richard Migliori, and there have been so many good ones. That right up there with the best, David Flores. My thanks to him for taking the time and to Sean Clancy. I'll step away for a quick break for a word from a couple of sponsors of In the Room, and I'll be back to tell you what's ahead.
Want to get closer to your favorite stars in racing? Fanticipate is an online auction platform where fans can bid on unique items from their favorite competitors before the gates even open. Compete with other fans to win items from owners, trainers, and jockeys participating in select Breeders' Cup Challenge Series races and more, and take home a piece of the race. Visit Fanticipate.com for more information and to view our live auctions. Own a piece of the action with Fanticipate.
Experience the thrill of racehorse ownership with My Racehorse Microshares. From the team that brought you Kentucky Derby winner Authentic, My Racehorse offers affordable racehorse ownership for less than $100 with no ongoing fees. My Racehorse features top trainers including Todd Fletcher, Steve Asmussen, Richard Mandela, and more, along with a supercharged mobile app that allows you to purchase shares online. Enjoy insider access to your stable and attend exclusive events. Visit MyRacehorse.com and become an owner today. My Racehorse offers securities only for the use of an offering circulation. It's part of an offering statement. Qualified by the Securities and Exchange Commission under Tier 2 of Regulation A. A copy of the offering circular can be obtained at MyRacehorse.com.
All right, thanks to My Racehorse Fanticipate for helping to make that segment possible each week. Don't forget, every week a portion of the sponsorship involved within the room is donated back to the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund, the PDJF. If you want to support In the Room and help out PDJF, simply give us a call or you can email me, mike@horseracingradio.net. You can get a hold of Sean Clancy as well. ThisIsHorseRacing.com. And we will set you up and get you involved with the program. But again, my thanks to My Racehorse and Fanticipate and to this week's guest, David Flores. I'll step away for another break. I'll come back and take you on a stroll through racing history with our good friend, Kurt Becker. This is the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on HRRN.
Watch and wager on world-class racing from Woodbine Racetrack with Thursday, Saturday, and Sunday post times of 1:10 p.m. Eastern and a Friday post time of 4:50 p.m. Eastern. And on September 18th and 19th, you are not going to want to miss another big 2 days of racing with four Grade 1 races, including three Breeders' Cup Challenge, Winning Your In races featuring the Woodbine Mile, Natalma, and Summer Stakes. For more information on racing and handicapping, visit woodbine.com. That's woodbine.com.
This year, the fans choose the finalists. Coming this August, for the first time ever, the fans pick the finalists in four 2021 America's Best Racing Fan Choice Awards categories. Favorite racing TV personality, racetrack food, podcast or radio show, and favorite smaller circuit racetrack. Get ready to be heard and to vote on americasbestracing.net.
The Adidas Spring Stallion roster is loaded with classic bloodlines and classic performance.
Oh, the classy point of entry would not be denied.
Dynaformer Zaire Point of Entry, a global sire with black type horses in five countries, and the number one sire of Grade 1 performers in his crop. Multiple Grade 1 winner Shaman Ghost, the best son of Ghost Zapper, whose two-year-olds race this year.
And it's going to be won by Shaman Ghost! He has won the Woodward!
Silent Name, the only son of Sunday Silence at Stud in North America, and Canada's champion sire 3 years in a row.
Silent Poet in front of the Neoptic, and this one's for you, Martha. Silent Poet's won it.
And the newest addition to the Adina Springs roster, American Guru, from a proven winning family, steeped in tradition, with a strong Mr. Prospector influence on both sides.
But American Guru continues to keep on giving, and American Guru has dominated.
Classic bloodlines, classic performance. Visit AdinaStallions.com.
The spring summer meet is just heating up at Gulfstream Park, with racing now through September 26th, Friday through Sunday. Look forward to the FTBOA Florida Sire Stakes Series starting July 31st. And stay in on the action from the comfort of your mobile phone with First Bet, the official app of Gulfstream Park. For 10 Palms reservations, stake schedules, or tips and analysis, visit GulfstreamPark.com. We are now fully open for public viewing.
Hi, this is jockey Emma Jane Wilson, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Corporate report on the inside, hanging tough. Hansel now attacks on the outside. Hansel on the outside. Corporate report at the rail. There's five for five. Five for three is not gaining on the top two. Through the final 70 yards, it's Corporate report on the inside. Wire-to-wire winner of the Crabber. Hansel on the outside, second. Lysol free third. Then it was Strike the Gold, followed by Lost Mountain, and far, far back, Kong Po.
Welcome back. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you on this Saturday morning. Corporate report. The winner of the 1991 Midsummer Derby, that was Dave Johnson with the call. And it's a tough one for me to listen to because I was a massive fan of Strike the Gold. Remember Strike the Gold? Strikey, as Nick Zito called him. He would come from out of the clouds, come flying late. Corporate report, got the better of him and everybody else that day in 1991. Chris McCarron was aboard for Hall of Famer Dwayne Lucas and owner William T. Young in his Overbrook Farm. Corporate report was special on that day, and he is certainly part of racing history. One sidebar, I'm going to get you to Kurt Becker's stroll through racing history in just a minute, but one sidebar looking back, I was thinking about this during the commercial break on the conversation Sean had with David Flores in the previous segment. David Flores is always going to hold a special place for me because the first horse my wife and I ever bought a piece of, his name was Rush Rush. I remember going to see him on the farm in Versailles, Kentucky. I bought into him with Jude Feld's brother, Bob Feld, and his Bongo Racing. And it was a big deal for us. We had just a couple percent of the horse, and that was a big, big, big deal. It was a big investment for us back then. And his debut came at the Oak Tree meet at Santa Anita, and it was down the hill on the turf course. And he came flying. He was far back early under David Flores. David was aboard. Came flying. He got up to win in his debut, October 18th, 2006. I have the picture above my mantle in the living room at the house. I will never forget that day. It's a moment that that I'll cherish. And it was courtesy of Rush Rush and David Flores. And, of course, the Feld brothers for getting us involved. But special moment, and I was thinking about that during the break and how cool it was to have David Flores aboard the horse that day. All right, well, it is time now, as we do every week at this time, to take you on a stroll through racing history with Kurt Becker.
Hello, I'm Kurt Becker. Thanks for joining me as I take another stroll through racing history presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. He was known as a horse who made huge rallies to win big races by small margins. He was said to have great ability, but was nonchalant in his attitude. His name was Buck Passer, and 55 years ago this month, he won the Travers Stakes at Saratoga on his way to being named Horse of the Year. A Blood Bay son of Tom Fool, foaled in 1963, Buck Passer was a homebred who raced in the Black Silks and Cherry Cap of Ogden Phipps. He was a striking individual, standing nearly 17 hands. Equine artist Richard Stone Reeves once noted that he was as close to the perfect thoroughbred in terms of conformation as can be found. Reeves described Buck Passer as large, beautifully proportioned, deep through the middle, near perfect quarters and hind legs, deep, well-sloped shoulders, good bone, straight legs, and showing intelligence in his eyes. Buck Passer won 9 of 11 starts as a juvenile and became the richest two-year-old of all time, amassing $568,000 in earnings. Trained by Bill Winfrey, Buck Passer earned the title of champion two-year-old of 1965. But Winfrey resigned from the Phipps barn at the end of the season, so Eddie Neloy took command and would be charged with guiding Buck Passer through his sophomore campaign. Following a win in the Flamingo Stakes at Hialeah in March of 1966, Buck Passer was found to have injured his right front hoof. The quarter crack would cause him to miss the entire Triple Crown campaign. But on Belmont Stakes Day, held at Aqueduct that year, Buck Passer returned to the races by blitzing a field of older horses at 6 furlongs in 109-1, fastest time of the meet at the distance. On June 25, 1966, Buck Passer got his first chance to prove himself against the stars of the Triple Crown races. Kawaii King, winner of the Kentucky Derby and Preakness, would be among the horses entered in the Arlington Classic in Chicago at a distance of 1 mile. A crowd of 28,000 would make the coupled entry of Buck Passer and Impressive, his fifth stablemate, the 3-5 favorite. And the two horses ran Eddie Neloy's game plan to perfection. Impressive set a torrid pace so that the late-closing Buck Passer could make his rally. A quarter in 22 1/5 seconds, a half in 43-3, three quarters in 106-4. Buck Passer, still languishing 9 lengths in arrears, then uncorked a sizzling stretch run to win in 132-3, breaking the world record for the 1 mile distance by 0.3 seconds. Kawaii King finished fifth. 6 weeks after that Arlington Classic victory, Buck Passer returned to Arlington Park, this time for the American Derby. The distance was 1 1/8 miles, and the field would include Belmont Stakes winner Amber Royd. On this occasion, Buck Passer was coupled to the wagering with stable mate Stupendous. Once again, the entry was the 3-5 favorite. Once again, the stablemate set the pace, and a crowd of 31,000 saw Buck Passer rally down the lane to win by a neck over long shot Jolly Jet in 1 minute 47 seconds, breaking the track record. Amber Royd was sixth. And then came the Travers Stakes in Saratoga Springs, New York. The date was August 20, 1966. Buck Passer was the 1-5 favorite, and there were some anxious moments when he was still last as the field moved around the final turn. Niloy later said he was scared. Several in the crowd of 28,000 probably felt the same way as the trainer did. But not even the graveyard of favorites, Saratoga, could stop Buck Passer. Using one of his trademark stretch rallies, Buck Passer prevailed by 3/4 of a length over Amber Royd to win the 97th running of the Travers, becoming the first thoroughbred ever to reach $1 million in career earnings by age 3. It was his 9th consecutive victory, all in stakes races and all as the odds-on favorite. There was no question at this point that he was the best 3-year-old in the entire country. But he wasn't finished. On October 1st, Buck Passer beat older horses in the mud to win the Woodward at Aqueduct. And on October 29, he again beat older horses, this time capturing the Jockey Club Gold Cup at a distance of 2 miles. Buck Passer would reign not only as champion 3-year-old male, but also as Horse of the Year for 1966. Ogden Phipps called him the best horse he had ever bred. Following another championship handicap season in 1967, he was syndicated at a record $150,000 per share for stallion duty. He retired to Claiborne Farm in Paris, Kentucky, where he had been foaled. He died in March of 1978. A winner of 25 of 31 races with earnings of $1.4 million, Buck Passer was a champion at 2, beat older horses and became Horse of the Year at 3, and won major handicaps under high weights at 4. He won 19 stakes races, including a string of 15 consecutive victories. And 55 years ago this month, he won the Travers Stakes at Saratoga as part of his Horse of the Year campaign. Please join me again next week as I take another stroll through racing history, presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. For HRRN, I'm Kurt Becker.
Great stuff. And again, if much like our In the Room segment with Sean Clancy, if you miss any of Kurt Becker's Stroll Through Racing History segments, which have just been fantastic, you can go back to our website, horseracingradio.net. You click on the Shows tab at the very top of the homepage. Click on the Shows tab, and it pulls up a page for each and every one of our shows, and that includes In the Room with Sean Clancy and those Stroll Through Racing History segments with Kurt Becker. You can just click on there and go back and listen all day long. Some fantastic stuff from both of those gentlemen. And my thanks to Kurt for putting that together and to Lane's End and Keeneland for making those segments possible each and every week. I'll get to a break. When I come back, it's time to go down the road to the Breeders' Cup as I welcome in French turf rider John Gilmore. This is the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on HRRN.
Kentucky Downs is home to the best turf racing in America and attracts the largest fields in the country, competing for over $15 million in purses over 6 days, making it the largest prize money available in thoroughbred racing due to the addition of KTDF funds. Sign up for Kentucky Downs Turf Handicapping Challenge presented by DRF and win NHC and BCBC entries, as well as a chance to be crowned the Bet Makers King of the Turf. For more information on how to sign up, visit kingoftheturf.com.
A 5-time graded stakes winning earner of almost $3 million, Airdrie Studs Collected is the all-time leading earner by City Zip. Winner of the Grade 1 Pacific Classic over Arrogate, Collected also romped by 14 lengths in the Grade 3 Precisionist Stakes, defeating Accelerate. Collected bred full books of quality mares in his first 2 seasons, and his first crop yearlings will be unveiled at public auction later this summer. Collected stands at Airdrie Stud for 17,500 stands and nurses. Think about it.
Hey,
Hey, horse players, it's Paul Allen, radio voice of the Purple and track announcer at Canterbury Park. In 2020, Canterbury introduced a 10% takeout pick five, the best value in racing. This year, in addition to the nation's lowest takeout pick five, Canterbury is introducing an all-new $1 10% takeout pick six. No jackpots, no gimmicks. Watch and wager on Canterbury Park all summer. Racing runs Tuesday through Thursday at 5 p.m. Central and Sundays at 1. CanterburyPark.com. Come play.
This proven son of AP Indy has sired over 50 stakes winners and well over 100 stakes horses. Recent top performers include Search Results, winner of the Grade 1 Acorn Stakes and a hard-fought second in the Kentucky Oaks. Pass the Champagne, runner-up in the Grade 1 Ashland Stakes, plus these standout performers. Two-year-olds by Flatter sold up to $625,000. And his yearlings have recently topped Fazy Tipton's July sales twice. Flatter, standing at Claiborne Farm.
The richest meet in Oak Lawn's history begins Friday, December 3rd through Sunday, May 8th. The 66-day meet will offer more than $45 million in purses with 36 stakes races totaling $12.3 million. And all allowance races are now worth $100,000. Oak Lawn boasts the richest Triple Crown Prep Series in the country, highlighted by the $1 million Rebel on Friday, February 26th, and the Grade 1 Arkansas Derby Saturday, April 2nd, now offering a purse of $1.25 million. Learn more at oaklawn.com.
Hi, my name is Alan Garcia.
My name is Paco Lopez.
This is Jose Lescano.
This is jockey Emma Jane Wilson, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Velocidad on the outside has a clear run on the wide outside with 400 meters to go. Then behind those is Twami's Son. Asymmetric might be looking for room. Then stand side, we've got Trident picking up and also Baguette. But on the far side, it's Velocidad, but very wide here. Kunan in the red and white with Have a Good Day on the far side now. Armour picking up late. Meanwhile, near side, we've got Trident on the stand side. Also, Perfect Power picking up late on. It's going to be Perfect Power who gets the money. Perfect Power. From Velocidad in second and tied in behind third and fourth.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on this Saturday morning. Perfect Power, that's the way it sounded on August 22nd in France when Perfect Power won the Prix Mornay and punched his ticket to the Juvenile Turf Sprint. There have been two major Breeders' Cup prep races contested in France over the past 13 days or so. And to take you down the road to the Breeders' Cup, I will welcome in John Gilmore, but it is indeed time to head down that road to the Breeders' Cup.
It's time to go down the road to the Breeders' Cup.
Well, the Breeders' Cup will be here before we know it, and no doubt that we'll get a chance to see a couple of prominent runners who have punched their ticket in France over the past couple of weeks. And John Gilmore is a turf rider. He is based in France, does a fantastic job, and who better to talk about French racing than John Gilmore? John, happy to have you with me today.
Nice to be with you. It's great. I've spent the last month, the weekends at Deauville, watching these top-class races, and there's been some fantastic performances. You mentioned the Perfect Power. That's his second Breeders' Cup winning your in-race win, and he actually was blocked at the back of the field and came through strongly, so should give a good account of himself if he does run in the Breeders' Cup race. But I believe his next race will be the Middle Park Stakes, and then they'll decide what to do after that.
Do you think we will see him at Del Mar November 5th or 6th?
Pardon?
Do you think we will see him at Del Mar in November?
I think it depends on how he runs in his next one, the Middle Park Stakes. I think they're taking it race by race. It's not. I think if he gives a good account of himself and it doesn't take too much out of him, I think they'll probably may decide to run him in that race. But obviously the problem is in the States, the sprinters are very strong normally, so maybe they might look and see what's running against him from the American side.
Well, the other horse that earned his way to the Breeders' Cup is Palace Pier, the British bred, who won on August 15th. He is now going to the FanDuel Mile. Tell me more about Palace Pier.
Well, Palace Piers won the race for the second year running. He wasn't fully fit, 80% fit, according to John Gosden. But unfortunately, he's the first horse to do the double since 1994. I think that he's likely to run in the Champion Stakes at Ascot in October and then be retired. So will not probably be running in the Breeders' Cup. But the second horse, Poetic Flair, I spoke to Jim Bolger. I had a fantastic tussle with him, Palace Pier, is likely to run possibly in the Breeders' Cup race.
Yeah, so many great horses racing overseas that our listeners aren't always familiar with. So, John, I'll ask you to kind of give me an overview of who some of the top horses are in Europe that we could see at the Breeders' Cup in November.
The first week in August, you had Marion Afoot completed an 8-race winning streak in the 1,300 metres Maurice de Guise, trained by Jerome Rainier at Marseille. He was off the track last year for a year after an injury at Doha, and he's won 8 races since December, running virtually every month. And that horse, I spoke to Rainier, has said that he will run in the Prix Fauré and likely to also, if he runs well again, will turn up at the Breeders' Cup for hopefully his 10th victory on the trot.
Yeah, it would be great to see. There was also a bit of an upset recently with Grand Glory defeating Audaria. Tell me about that.
Yeah, Grand Glory obviously has an American-Italian interest with John D'Amato, based in Florida. He's been a big advocate of French racing for a long time and has shares in a number of horses, including Grand Glory, with two other friends. Italian American friends. Grand Glory ran in the Prix d'Anne, as you know, a couple of years ago, ran third. It was actually balked and was unlucky, should have won the Prix d'Anne, which is a Group 1 race for fillies, 3-year-olds. And since then, she was sick twice the year after. And Biatoloni, the Maison Lafitte trainer, Italian trainer, has taken a long time to get her back to her form. And, you know, it's been patient. Last year, they were thinking of selling it for breeding stock, but Biatoloni changed their minds. And obviously, with Fruition, it's proved a good thing because she won a Group 3 the time before at Vichy, and then covered herself in glory by having a neck-to-neck struggle with last year's Breeder Cup fillies and mares winner, Aurelia, and finally just got home by a head. It was the most fantastic race I've seen for a long time. Christian DeMuro rode a tremendous race on the horse because Eroitz Mendezabel got the first run on Aurelia. He came and timed his finish beauty and just got up on the line, and it was a fantastic reception, the best of the month back into the winner's enclosure with, as you can imagine, only Italians can do, and everybody was kissing everybody, and it was a really fantastic scene. John has said that the horse will run in the Prix de l'Opera next on Arc Day, and everything being well, he wants to run the horse in the fillies and mares race, where he will obviously meet up again with Oradea, who won the race last year. So it was a really great race. That was the most, you know, fantastic race I saw for throughout the whole month. And John has been a great advocate of French racing, and He doesn't like the idea of drug racing in the States, and he loves to run in France because racing is clean over there.
Yeah, that's a bit of a different scenario, and we've talked about this many times on the program, but the fact that horses in Europe do not race on Lasix, which is a race day medication that is allowed here in the United States, although many different events, including Breeders' Cup and Breeders' Cup prep races and races leading up to our Kentucky Derby and Triple Crown, are starting to go Lasix free. Tell me more about the way that that's handled overseas, John.
I think European people, racing people, can't really understand why American racing needs to have race day Lasix, because you know, they don't use it in Europe. We still, you know, we run horses. We have obviously some bleeders, but normally if you have a heavy bleeder in France, you don't race them anyway. You know, Andre Fab has gone on record as saying that race day Lasix is equivalent to doping horses and gives them, you know, a certain advantage. And I think that's why you get the situation where when English runners or French runners run in the States in Breeders' Cup races or other races or in the past, they run on Lasix because they don't want to have an unfair advantage or give an unfair advantage to the Americans. And but saying that, you get people like John Gosden, who obviously won with Enable the 2 years ago. He says, you know, race day Lasix should be banned, but he ran his horse Enable on Lasix when he won. So you know, for me personally, Andre Fab is the only real European trainer who's clean on this sort of story, because he refuses categorically to run his horses in the States on Lasix, and he still gets good results. So, you know, and Aidan O'Brien is another one, who top trainer in Europe, who always runs his horses on Lasix in the States. So, you know, it's a difficult subject, but I think they do it because they don't, you know, they want to compete on the same level as the Americans, and so, which is proving the fact that it is an advantage to have Lasix obviously in a race.
Yeah, interesting comments. John Gilmore is with me here on the Road to the Breeders' Cup segment. John, a turf writer, as you can tell, over in Europe, and does a fantastic job covering the sport. John, correct me if I'm wrong, but horses in Europe are allowed to train on Lasix, just can't race on Lasix. So how common is it the horses will train on Lasix and then obviously not have it in their system on race day?
I think the situation is that if they will maybe train them on Lasix if they have a known blood problem, you understand? I don't think normally trainers will not use Lasix on horses that don't have any problems at all. And I think that's the difference between Europe and America, that in the States they automatically put horses on Lasix, you understand, in training or whatever, whether they're bleeders or not. I mean, all horses bleed. I mean, I'm talking about excessive bleeders. But, you know, if we have a bad bleeder in France, I think they would generally not race them. But I think some trainers, obviously, in France do use Lasix in training. But if they have some, you know, a reasonable problem of bleeding. But I think it's used sparingly.
Yeah, it's definitely an issue that is it has people on both sides of the fence, and there are passionate arguments on both sides of that issue. The other thing that I wanted to bring up, John, is the fact that when horses win a Breeders' Cup Challenge race, their entry fees are paid. If I'm not mistaken, I think that their transportation costs are covered.
Correct.
So it's a true win and you're in, and that's important for horses coming from Europe.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, that's an added incentive. But I think there are a couple of problems here, because with your racing at the beginning of November, we have the ARC meeting at the beginning of October, and then you have that big Champions Day a couple of weeks later at Ascot. There are, you know, other sort of interests over here which could, you know, obviously maybe trainers would prefer to run them there, because especially if they haven't won any of these races, because obviously the costs could be $30,000-$40,000 to take a horse over there. So I think if you're spending that sort of money, and obviously, you know, there's a fatigue angle obviously in traveling, you don't know how that might affect a horse. I think if you're spending that sort of money, then you have to be sure that you're going to run in the money in the race. And I think that's a factor that people consider. I mean, they don't want to send a horse from Europe over there unless they can get some sort of return on their money, especially if they haven't had their winning, you know, the traveling costs are not paid because they won one of the qualifying races.
Yeah, good point. Well, the decision is still yet to be made for many of the European runners as to whether they will indeed make the trip to Del Mar in November. How about you, John? Are you coming?
If somebody pays me, I don't think my wife would let me. She wouldn't trust me. Yeah, I think that would be. I think I'm okay going a few days away here, but I think spend about over a week in the States and leave them at home. I think the wife would have to come along as well, I think.
Yeah, well, there you go. Well, it would be that'd great
be
to see you.
Cost.
Yeah, it would be great to see you, and can't thank you enough for spending some time with me this morning. And obviously, we'll do it again. Keep up the great work, and we'll talk soon.
Thanks a lot.
All right, John Gilmore, turf writer, who covers racing in France, and really right on top of things, as you can tell, talking about all the major contenders and the horses that have won over the past couple of weeks that have punched their ticket to the Breeders' Cup, in particular in France, and that, of course, Perfect Power, who did it on August 22nd, and Palace Pier, August 15th. Maybe that's the key to winning one of those challenge races in France. Just have your first and last name begin with a P. Perfect Power, Palace Pier, I don't know, maybe a Swami angle for those of you who are looking for something different, a different way to bet the horses. All right, I'm going to come back and wrap things up for you, tell you what's ahead on the network. That's next on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Gainsway Stallion Taprit, a $1.2 million yearling at Saratoga. Taprit's victories include the Grade 1 Belmont Stakes.
And they're into the stretch. Irish War Cry turns for home with Taprit trying to run him down in the last furlong. The two of them are now a half length apart. They are clear of Gormley and Patch. It is Irish War Cry. And on the outside, Taprit. Taprit has taken the lead. Taprit and Irish War Cry come down to the line together. It is Taprit and Jose Ortiz in the Belmont Stakes.
In his first 2 years at stud, Taprit has bred over 240 mares. Now his first weanlings have arrived, selling for up to $100,000. One of the best bred sons of Sire Sire's Taprit to ever enter stud. Classic winner and stakes record setter, Taprit, standing at Gainesway.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence educating and developing industry leaders for over 33 years. Classes are taught by industry experts in the state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Joe Buck and John Smoltz welcoming you back to the City Center Convenience Mart. Well, John, the stage is set for the final transaction.
That's right, Joe. Heather's moment has arrived, and you just hope all that training pays off.
Heather lays down her purchase, but Randy rings it up as slowly as he can.
He is a wily veteran.
It gives Heather's eyes the chance to wander.
Uh-oh.
Yep, she's looking at the cigarettes.
There's nothing good back there. Quit now, and in 5 years, your odds of getting certain cancers drop 50%.
Meanwhile, Randy's stone-faced. He's giving nothing away. He just stands there, wetting his cashier's finger on that sponge.
Heather toes the rubber.
Here we go. Heather's arm is in motion. But instead of pointing at the back wall, she just grabs the gum off the counter.
That's a slick move.
Heather, back, back, back. She is out of there. Even Randy tips his cap to Heather. Stand Up to Cancer and Rally wants you to reduce your risk for cancer.
Go to takeahealthystand.org.
Don't miss HRRN's special coverage of the Virginia Derby this Tuesday, beginning at 4:30 p.m. Eastern. Mike Pena and Bobby Newman will broadcast live from Colonial Downs and bring you complete coverage of Virginia's marquee race. It's the Virginia Derby, only here on HRRN. Tune in on Sirius 219, XM 201, or streaming live at horseracingradio.net.
This is Carlos Martin, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Hey, well, don't forget the nomination deadline for this year's Claiming Crown at Gulfstream Park is Monday, November 8th. The Claiming Crown returning to Gulfstream on December 4th. It is a partnership between the National HBPA and the Thoroughbred Owners and Breeders Association. And the Claiming Crown has really envisioned to be the claiming horse owners' Breeders' Cup. The Breeders' Cup for the claiming horses, if you will. And it's a fantastic event, a total of $810,000 in guaranteed purses from the horsemen at Gulfstream Park are going to be given away. So make sure you mark your calendar and nominate by November 8th. Do it today, though. Don't delay to get into the claiming crown. The September issue of Bloodhorse Magazine features 154 pages, including No Easy Ride, as top jockeys reach their peak. Naira Colony features Impressive Depth, that story by Teresa Gennaro. National Parks, integrity, safety, more important than ever as the Philly area track garners greater attention. And A Sleeping Giant stirs. A Sleeping Giant means big change, which could be coming to racing in China. But how big is big? That story by turf writer Bob Kiekeffer. You can download a copy of the September issue now from the Bloodhorse Magazine app via the App Store or Google Play, or subscribe today and receive a free gift at bloodhorse.com/subscribers only. Well, it's been a very busy program. Don't forget, we come your way 4:30 Eastern on Tuesday with exclusive radio coverage of the Virginia Derby. My thanks to Tim Wilkin, Ron Moquette, Ralph Nix, Jill Byrne, John Sadler, David Flores, and John Gilmore for helping to make this show possible and being with us. If you missed any portion, head to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can check out the podcast at your leisure. By the way, predicting a dead heat in the Travers this afternoon. Ken McPeak and King Fury, dead heating with essential quality. It's a rematch, a replay of 2012, if you will. That's my prediction. My thanks to my producer, Lee Delapina, in our Lexington studio, and to Chauncey for handling all of our social media. We'll talk to you Tuesday, 4:30 Eastern, here on the network for the Virginia Derby. I'm Mike Penna. Thanks for listening. And of course, go Steelers. Thank you.